kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
I thought you liked WWE, right? Like, are you used to?
Me?
Yeah.
None. That's in my knowledge. I've never come to mind.
Okay, never mind. I was going to say Kane's theme song in, like, 2004.
Oh, no, WWE, like, wrestling, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, but I think it was before 2004, though.
What other WWE is there? What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining me as usual, CJ. CJ, how you doing?
Tired. Worked.
Blah, blah, blah.
I got new games, though.
You got new games?
Yeah, I started collecting physical games again.
What did you get?
Well, I decided to finally buy Amazon Prime because ReCore was on a major deal for Prime members only, and it was down to like $12. And then...
Second, I thought you just kind of misstated. Like, I just bought the game Amazon Prime. It's an awesome game.
No, I got Amazon Prime because of the discount. And then I grabbed, Abzu physically, because it was on sale for like 11 something. Dark Souls 2, Scholar of the First Sin Edition, and Rainbow Six Siege.
Cool.
Yeah. And I have three more games coming, but, you know, whatever.
What three?
One you'll be excited about. I'm getting Rock Band.
Oh my god! What?
It was 50 cents. I was like, yeah, 50 cents.
Are you serious?
Oh, you're getting like the original.
Yeah. Well, I just said yeah, the original one.
Oh.
Where the fuck am I gonna get 50 cents?
Why would you start with Rock Band 1 now?
I'm not gonna start it. It was 50 cents. Why not add it to the collection? At that point. You know, and then I got Devil May Cry 4 for like $2.50, and The Bourne Conspiracy for $1, but that one didn't have a case, so it's just gonna be a disc.
You're literally just buying shit to buy shit at this point.
No, most of those games I plan on playing, but Rock Band for 50 cents, I was like, why not?
Just letting you know, as a seasoned vet, that's a dark road to go down. upstairs. Nowhere to put it.
So I'm sure you could tell, but also joining us this episode, Pernell Vaughn is back. Pernell, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right. Trying to teach the youngins to not overbuy their collectible 50-cent gadget games.
Hey, not all of those were 50 cents. Rainbow Six Siege was $22.
Hey, some of them $2.50. I mean,
it depends on the game. For 50 cents, I was like, "Why not add Rock Band to my collection?"
Are you ever going to play it though?
No, but two quarters, I'm not gonna miss.
Yeah, but you might miss the space that the disc and case are going to take up.
No, I'm not, because that was the whole point in buying it. Is so I have the disc and the case in my bookshelf. Which is designated for games.
Like 30 years old with a pile of like 50 cent games with a disc pride freaking.
So that's the goal. Just want to have a shit ton of games.
Like, oh my god, I'm so glad I have this disc rot set.
Yeah, I'm clearly in no position to judge the fact that you bought Rock Band for 50 cents just to have it, considering I have like fucking Tour de France from Europe on my shelf.
The amount of songs that you bought in Rock Band that you're probably not interested in playing at any point.
Oh, I'll play them. I will eventually play every song in Rock Band. There's a very good chance that I have played almost all the songs in Rock Band. Granted, there's some of the newer stuff like Grateful Dead and Bob Marley that I, not newer songs, but newer acquirings that I haven't played yet. It's not like I don't play stuff in Rock Band. Like, I have put an ungodly amount of time into the series.
Well, I know you have. I'm just assuming that you've bought games or songs on there that you don't actually care for, but just to have.
Rock Band has a little bit of a different, at least for me, until I gave up on trying to possibly keep up with all the tunes. For me, getting every track in Rock Band was more about having like the perfect karaoke / band play setup. So it's like, it wasn't so much I was buying songs for myself. I was buying songs for other people to want to play. Like, hey, I have all these options. You can't go wrong at my house to play Rock Band, you know? So that was why I wanted every tune. I guess you were probably in a similar boat.
I just checked and I have over 14 days of game time in Rock Band 4 alone.
That's a lot of time to put into a game.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can't judge you. I've put about the same and maybe even more into Trials Fusion. So
I should be embarrassed because my Rock Band 4 is still in this box upstairs.
Jesus. Damn, dude, you should open it up and play.
Joe's on Rock Band 4 right now on Xbox.
I'm in the game because I rebuilt my song library just because they put out a new update for Rock Band 4 just this week that adds missions, which, you know, it'll be stuff like upstrum 2,000 times on bass or complete 5 alternative songs with at least 25 hammer-on notes. Well, cool stuff like that. And because of the genres of some of the artists in there, like someone was saying, you know, Alanis Morissette popped up as, I think they said popped up as pop rock, but it counted as alternative. So they updated a lot of the genres for songs in the game. And they said, if you refresh your music library, that stuff should update automatically. So I did that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, checking back in, yeah, I have 11 days in Trials Fusion. For a platformer, that's a lot of time.
Gotta give them credit, though. For all the flack that Rock Band started taking down the line and whatnot, they never gave up on supporting the fans and giving them more product.
Well, they kind of gave up for a few years.
Well, you know what I mean? Like, Rock Band 4, like, they gave up on the property as a whole. But if I remember correctly, even during that block of years, there was still stuff coming on, like on Rock Band Network and stuff like that. Like, it was still stuff that you could grab.
Well, Rock Band Network wasn't Harmonix at all. Like, Rock Band Network was all independent. Yeah.
Yeah, but it still counts as like a cool aspect where there was still content to play and use. For me, eventually, it got to a point where I preferred Rock Band Network to Rock Band, the official store. Because I was using Rock Band to find new music to play. And as you probably know, much of the Rock Band official stuff was like, what are popular hits that people want in the game? So a lot of times it was music I already knew. It wasn't new to me. It was just a track that I can play in the game. But the network, it was like all kinds of weird, colorful bands that had no exposure. And it was awesome just kind of get access to those new tunes and then play them in the game.
That's Nita Rooney.
I love
it. It was spectacularific.
I'm still upset that there are 5 songs that I missed in Rock Band that I can never get.
If one of them is Bang Camaro, you lucked out.
Oh no, I have all the Bang Camaro stuff.
My condolences.
I don't have a problem with Bang Camaro. I like the fact that there's like 40 members of the band that all sing at once.
Jesus. Does that mean you had to find 40 people with microphones in order to play their songs?
That'd be amazing.
Mega harmonies.
That's the kind of song that works well at MAGFest, where there's just 40 people surrounding, waiting for their turn to play, so they could just all sing together.
It's such a good time when you got enough people to play the game with you. I do love Rock Band. Regardless. Man.
Good stuff. So we should probably cover the news of the week because we got lots going on.
There's news this week?
Yeah. What?
No, I just didn't expect there to be news.
Why?
Surprised me.
There's always news.
Because that... Move on. It was a joke. You frustrate me. He does the same thing and you're like, yeah, there's news with me. I do it. He's like, what?
No, but I wasn't joking. I was like, I don't recall too many explosive things happening this week.
There's always news on Thursdays. It doesn't matter.
Well, I think clearly the big news of the week is the fact that PlayStation Plus lineup for June was announced. And as you would expect with E3 month, they are bringing out the big dogs. PlayStation 3 is getting Abyss Odyssey, which is a cool 2D platformer action RPG. And then World Rally Championship 5, which is a pretty enjoyable game.
Easy trophies, too.
Is it?
Yeah, for all your trophies. I mean, it's easy in the sense that you have to just beat the game. I mean, it's not easy in the sense that it's like 5 hours, but still. It's like 20 hours, but it's not that hard.
The Vita has Spy Chameleon, which, okay.
I'm sad that Xbox will never give that away because they don't do games any cheaper than $10, it seems.
but
at the same time, it's $5.
That like, one is whatever. Also cross-buy with the PS4, so there's a twofer there. And then this is exciting. The other Vita game, which is also cross-buy on PS4, Neon Chrome from the guys at 10 Tons.
Nice. I remember you guys talking about it.
Neon Chrome is fucking awesome. So Vita and PS. What kind of game is that? Top-down shooter. Roguelike.
I can dig that.
Yeah, have you heard of Crimson Land?
Yes.
Same developers.
It's kind of like zombies. I made a game with zombies in it.
Yeah, kind of. Same developers for Neon Chrome as Crimson Land. So gameplay-wise, it's similar. But instead of just being like an arena where enemies kind of swarm in on you, you're going through actual levels and picking up weapons and bonuses and unlocking stuff, and it's good stuff. And 10 Tons is 10 Tons is working on 3 more top-down shooters, so they have found their niche and are going with it, which is exciting.
Nice.
They took a wheelhouse and they owned it.
Indeed. And then the PS4 is getting 2 pretty crazy titles. First up is the full season of Life is Strange, which fantastic series.
Yeah, I really need to go through that.
Didn't you know?
And then Killing Floor 2.
Which is fucking awesome. I really wish that was on Xbox already.
Oh, me too. Especially because I have like no friends on PlayStation, but maybe now.
Yeah, I remember that was your big issue when reviewing it.
Yeah, because it's very it's centered around playing with people, and maybe now that it'll be free, the handful of friends that I do have on PlayStation will want to play it with me.
Hopefully. It does seem like a really neat game. I hope it comes to Xbox eventually. Even at that
or
price
will
tag,
it be left?
I would still do it.
Or will it be left on the killing floor?
God. Who invited you?
I'll be here all week, folks. I thought you did.
Just as a refresher for comparison's sake, right now on Xbox One, we have Speedrunners, the brand new release Speedrunners, which we'll be reviewing a little bit later, and Assassin's Creed 3 on the 360. And then also Watch Dogs and Dragon Age Origins will be coming later on. So it's a tough race. There's good stuff all around this month.
I don't know what to give it to. I mean, value-wise, you're getting more money out of the PlayStation lineup.
At the end of the day, they're all free. If you got the account, download it, baby.
Yeah, if you have both systems and both memberships, you're really lucking out this month.
It's E3 month. They've got to bring out the big guns.
And both I mean, 3 AAA games on Xbox, and I guess, like, none of those are really AAA, I mean, over there, I don't think.
I think Killing Floor is close.
Killing Floor is close, but it was published and developed by Tripwire on PlayStation.
Yeah, it's still a $40 game, though, which is nice.
Yeah. I think that's probably the most expensive game being given this month.
Yeah. So, good stuff. Good stuff. No matter what platform you're on, you've got some good shit to play this month. So, no win. Everybody's a winner. There's no losers this month.
Except that one guy, but we don't want to talk about
Except the guy who only owns a PS3. Then go fuck yourself.
Or a Wii U.
Oh, God. If there's anyone out there who only owns a Wii U, I don't know, man.
What happened to your life?
You need to reevaluate.
You own 2 games on it, too. You own Super Smash Bros. And you own Mario Kart.
To be fair, if you only own a Wii U and you're listening to our show, you clicked on the wrong link, so we're sorry.
I mean, sometimes we talk about Wii U games.
they probably saw our pre-show of us talking about wrestling, and none of that's going to be in the show.
I love the WWE.
Now I feel like I need to have something in the cold open be like wrestling related, just so it can make a little bit of sense.
Yeah. Were you even recording any of that at that point? Or
yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I hit start recording as soon as I clicked to call. So.
Oh, wow. So you got the whole finger 11 conversation in it.
Oh, yeah. Good stuff. Oh, man. What other news came out this week? Some sad news. Middle Earth Shadow of War has been delayed to October 10th. So a 2-month delay there.
All right. Understandable. I mean, if it's a better game because of it, then oh, well, I'll move on.
True. I just worry about the fact that it went from a fairly open August to what I'm sure is going to be a packed October.
That's true. I mean, even August is starting to get packed. I know my most excited game right now of the year is an August release.
What game?
Oh, I am so excited for Volition to release, Deep Silver and Volition's Agents of Mayhem.
Yeah, that should be pretty good. Also, coming in August, this was just announced, Sonic Mania has an August 15th release date.
I really like
that.
I
trailer was boss, too.
Yeah.
I need to check out the trailer. Even though I'm not an old school gamer, I did actually get a chance to play the old school Sonic games in the past, and I actually really enjoyed them.
And it's also been confirmed the game's only going to be $20.
Oh, that's not bad.
Yeah, a lot of people were expecting something closer to like $40, especially given the collector's edition is $70. And now there's a lot of people are complaining like, I don't think the collector's edition's worth the extra $50. Like, have you seen the shit in that collector's edition?
The only thing I remember being spectacular about is the Sonic statue, which I think is nice.
A 12-inch tall Sonic statue of him standing on an old-school Genesis.
That makes the sound.
That is amazing. And then there's a replica Genesis cart with a gold Sonic ring.
That does seem pretty neat for $70. Like, you know that thing's going to be selling on eBay for like $150.
Yeah.
In a few years. Back in like January or December. It's like, I definitely want this the setup, but
I'd probably only buy the $20 version.
I have my collector edition pre-ordered and ready to roll.
That makes sense for you.
I'd be really happy if they released a bonus like cartoon based on the way they did the trailer, because I'd be... Boy, I'd be ecstatic for that crap real hard. See, it was just well done.
They're even going all out with the download card. Like, it's not just going to be like a shitty piece of paper. The download key is going to be on a metallic collector card.
Oh, wow. Wait. That actually disappoints me a little bit. In the collector's edition, it's not a disc?
No.
Oh, that's kind of...
I prefer it that way.
I mean, I know you would, but I think it would be cool to have a case and disc and everything set up.
It might be like just a logistics thing where getting the approvals to do a physical run of the game, pressing the discs and all that just isn't worth the hassle when they could just stamp a code on a metallic
card. That's true. Sega still doesn't know how well this is going to do considering some of the recent Sonic games haven't been great.
Plus, if they do a physical version, that would lead to reselling, which I'm sure they're trying to avoid.
Stuff is going to resell, like the statue and stuff, but...
Well, I mean, like, the actual game. Because once they sell the collector edition stuff, like, whatever, that's all gone. That's limited to begin with. But if they were selling a physical version of the game... People trading it into GameStop, and you know they're losing out on sales if people are buying pre-owned.
That's probably why a lot of that stuff happens, honestly.
It makes it suck for people that want to actually collect stuff, though, like that.
It's a collector's edition. There's plenty of shit in there to collect.
I don't give a shit about a statue, though. I don't want statues. I don't have room in my room for statues, bro.
But you have What?
The discs all fit in a bookshelf. I can't stack all my stuff neatly in a bookshelf for statues.
I don't have room for statues, but I have room for a pile of 56 game cases.
It's not a pile. They're all alphabetically organized in a bookshelf.
You don't need a game case. It comes with a Sega Genesis cartridge.
He has a horizontal pile.
That's not going to fit. Horizontal, it's vertical. Wait, is it vertical or horizontal? I always forget which one's which. Isn't horizontal the up and down? I think it's up and down.
Horizontal is like the horizon, looking on the horizon.
Yeah, but would that mean that the games are stacked on top of each other like that? Or
no,
like
that's vertical.
Side by side. Okay, it's side by side then. Shut up.
They're lining a shelf. Horizontally.
Like in skateboarding, a vert ramp because they're going up vertically?
Yeah, but they're also touching the horizon when they do that.
Oh, mercy.
God damn it.
So is there such thing as a horizon ramp then?
No.
Maybe. I don't even want to think about it. In some countries, I'm sure there is a horizon ramp. It's also called a sidewalk.
That's great. What is this conversation?
Anyway, other news. It was announced that Dungeon Defenders 2 is finally hitting official release.
What?
Yeah. Later on this month on Steam, PS4, and surprise, Xbox One.
I'm contemplating it. I don't even know how to work with it because I love the first Dungeon Defenders, but there seems to be like even more like extra purchasable stuff in this one than the first one even had. And as much as I like the first game, it became a little bit of an overkill. But I am curious to see how the final product is going to turn out and what they give you for just buying the base game.
Well, the thing is, the base is going to be free to play.
It's a free to play game.
Oh, the whole game is going to be free to play. Okay.
The only reason there's been a fee now is it's basically people have been paying for early access on Steam and PlayStation.
Okay.
But now it's hitting a quote-unquote official release, and on June 20th it releases, and it will be a free-to-play game on all platforms.
Intriguing.
Yeah. Xbox One version, I guess to make up for the fact that we've had to wait this long, is going to include an exclusive pet, an exclusive weapon, and a limited time exclusive map that will make its way to the other version shortly after launch. So it's good to see the game coming back to Xbox after the first one doing well on the 360.
Yeah, it's because that's where I used to play it on.
Yeah, I'm excited about that.
We just have to find the time, and heaven forbid, can we get a review copy? Obviously.
All I can do is send emails and hope. So, let's see. Kerbal Space Program has been purchased by Take-Two Interactive.
Oh, so is it going to technically not be considered an indie release anymore?
I don't know. Take-Two did release a statement saying that the current team at Squad will continue to provide support and ongoing development for the title through the game updates and expansions. So it looks like Squad is still going to be working on the game. I know a lot of fans are upset saying that Take-Two is going to kill the game, which you never know. I mean,
why would they purchase the game just to kill it, though? Although, hasn't there been rumors of Take-Two making their own space game and maybe...
I assume that him saying kill it was referring to their adding their flair to the game, which will change what the game is.
Okay. Yeah, that makes more sense.
Not adding their flair, they're just going to fuck with it and think they know how to make it better, but just end up ruining it. What was it today that someone from Take-Two... Here, Take-Two or Rockstar came out and were saying that they could find more ways to monetize their games.
You shouldn't actually say that out loud. People should not have to hear that shit.
They're saying like,
Who cares? Place just like little like on. I wouldn't mind in a game if like say like GTA where the billboards in the game are actual real advertisements.
No, that like adding more microtransactions.
Oh, well, that's
you just actually said who cares to why people don't want microtransactions in their games? What's happening to you?
No, I'm not talking about microtransactions. I thought he was referring more to the along the lines of actual advertisements in games.
No. Like, I don't care about billboard advertisements in games, but it's like, I think they want to look into doing more in terms of microtransactions.
Oh, fuck off with those. If it's a full price game, there should not be microtransactions unless DLC is going to be free because of it. Then I'm okay with it. Like Titanfall 2, no paid DLC because there's microtransactions. That's fine. Halo 5, same thing. I'm okay with those. But if it's going to charge DLC and have microtransactions like Call of Duty, they can fuck off.
You know the whole coughing while talking thing doesn't work well when you try it, right?
I don't care. I wanted it to be fairly obvious what I said. Or Destiny. Oh,
listen. Hack'em. Hack'em.
Listen.
Listen to me, wince.
I'm looking it up. It's the CEO of Take-Two, Strauss Zelnick, in an interview. He said, you can't give away stuff for free in perpetuity. There's no business model in doing that. But we're not trying to optimize the monetization of everything we do to the nth degree. My concern is if you do that, the customer knows. They might not even know that they know, but they feel it. We're convinced that we are probably, from an industry view, under-monetizing on a per-user basis. There is wood to chop because I think we can do more, and we can do more without interfering with our strategy of being the most creative and our ethical approach, which is delighting customers.
Well, there's already microtransactions and shit in games like the NBA games. I can see where what they're referring to with those, maybe trying to charge for new players that come in. Or stuff like that.
I wish they would stop focusing on fucking GTA Online and put out some actual single-player content. I have not ever gotten into GTA Online, and for how hard they push shark cards and buying in-game money and all that, like, I will never get into GTA Online, ever. I just
it's
don't
pretty
care.
Neat, but only if you have friends to actually play it with. Otherwise, it's a bullshit. It's just awful and annoying. If you're playing with random people, they're almost all dickheads that play that game, and it's no fun.
Yeah. I wonder why. That shouldn't surprise anybody.
No, but if you're playing with some friends and doing like the new race stuff they added, like cunning stunts, is incredible, and I'm completely fine with them adding that. It's made some great videos to watch online, which is basically how I experienced GTA at this point because I refused to pay another $60 when I paid $60 for the 360 version.
I'll admit, though, I'm in the same bucket as Joe on that. Though, like, I used to like online GTA back in the first game on the PC and all. But at this point in time, I think they've done enough with the multiplayer to the point where they really should go back to doing some more single player stuff for people who are not just like living online. Because when they had
at this point, I don't think they're gonna do it at all.
I don't think they will either. I think it's just easier for them to keep shitting out. Oh, you could get new cars and. Oh, you can go up ramps now.
A lot of people are pretty happy with it, though. Like, a lot of people enjoy the GTA Online aspect. It's still a very popular game.
Oh, of course. I'm fine with that. But, I mean, come on. I think they can handle a little bit of a side project or something to get back to the basis. I mean, how long ago did GTA 5 come out? It's been
originally 2013, I believe.
Good Lord.
That's because I bought it in 2013 when it came out for $60, and that's why I refused to buy the next gen version.
That's redunk. I don't know. Maybe it's because I'm getting older and I don't give a shit about online stuff anymore.
Well, I didn't want to say it out loud, but I was thinking it.
Get off my lawn, you son of a bitch.
Well, I mean, really I wouldn't cool complain man. if they made single player stuff, because I personally prefer single player games anyway for the most part. But it's not like I'm going to complain that they're making them free. I mean, they have microtransactions, but the updates are free. True. Don't have to pay extra.
I just
because they're making all their money from the microtransactions.
Yeah, but that doesn't bother me. Some people are stupid enough to pay for in-game money. Well, I won't say stupid enough because some people have the money to actually afford to do that.
Some people just have enough addictive tendencies to buy in-game money.
Yeah,
Anyway, since we're talking about things that are sure to piss people off, last bit of news I have is that the allegedly full roster of Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite was revealed and leaked on NeoGAF.
Oh.
And, not too happy. The Capcom really? Side has Arthur from Ghosts and Goblins, Chris Redfield, Chun-Li, Dante, Firebrand from Ghosts and Goblins, Jetta from Darkstalkers, the Monster Hunter, Morgan, Nemesis, Ryu, Spencer, Strider, and X, Mega Man X. Apparently one character is still missing there, but it's speculated to be Frank West. And then the Marvel side has Ant-Man, Captain America, Captain Marvel, Doctor Strange, Gamora, Hawkeye, Hulk, Iron Man, Nova, Rocket, and Groot, apparently together. I don't know if it's like a tag team thing or what. Spider-Man, Thanos, Thor, and Ultron.
Yeah, okay, they're missing some pretty big names.
No Wolverine, no X-Men at all.
Well, I remember you talking about that a couple,
yeah.
What, like 2 weeks ago, saying that it was speculated that yeah. was going to be the case.
Well, it looks to be confirmed that, like, not even fucking Wolverine. The series started off as an X-Men fighting game, which led to X-Men versus Capcom, which led to Marvel versus Capcom, or X-Men versus Street Fighter, sorry, which led to Marvel versus Capcom. And to not have any X-Men, not have like the series poster boy of Wolverine, I'm not buying the game because of that. I will not buy the game.
It's probably Fox licensing too that's screwing them.
It's not licensing.
That is possible.
Because movie DLC licensing has nothing to do with video game licensing. It is a Marvel spite thing where they want this to be focused around the Marvel Cinematic Universe and intentionally leave out the X-Men because they can. Maybe they'll eventually show up as DLC, but to have fucking Wolverine be paid DLC, theoretically, we don't even know. I mean, again, this is leaked. It's not 100% confirmed yet, so they could always possibly change it. But if Wolverine's not in there, out of principle, I will not buy this game. Fuck him.
I'm not going to buy it either way because I don't care about fighting games. But yeah, I understand.
Even on the Capcom side, like, no Amoratsu from Okami, no Phoenix Wright, no Beautiful Joe. Like,
well, I think Phoenix Wright was more like a gimmick character. Anyway, I mean, as much as I was happy he was in the last one.
He was such a cool addition, though. Such a cool and unique addition.
Yeah, trust me, like I said, I like him too, but I think he was like a. I think they ended up making him more as a joke character. And from what I remember hearing, he wasn't very well used on the fighter circuit. So that's probably a part of that too. But I liked him. Like, he was why I bought the game.
Not everybody plays the fighter circuit either.
Yeah.
Some people just want to enjoy the game, and those people might want to play with a silly or wacky character.
I'm not denying that, but I've also come to realize, at least when it comes to Capcom, that much of their releases and work nowadays is meant to cater to that community. Like, they've been doing most of their recent moves have been catering to that community of players.
Hopefully they change something, because there's been too many fighting games out there already to not include Wolverine and lose sales over it. Like, fucking just in this month, or the past month, Injustice 2, and now I think this week we have Tekken 7.
Guilty Gear Rev 2 came out in the last couple weeks too, I think.
It's like, Jesus. There's so many fighting games. You can't afford to lose your primary character.
Yeah.
There's so many every game at this point. I mean, we are
saturated. See this many fighting games in one period. It's like really weird that and they're just all
a resurgence. Tekken 7. The genre's had a resurgence. Super Street Fighter 5, or actually more like Street Fighter 4 when I think about it, brought about a resurgence to fighting games. It's surprising but true. So they're everywhere now.
Like, yeah. The it just Street, so happens Street Fighter right 4 did really well. The Mortal Kombat reboot on last gen did really well. And now with Mortal Kombat X on current gen doing really well. Injustice 2 has been getting great reviews. Tekken 7 has been getting insane reviews. I mean, even look back with Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3 being available with double the characters and only $25 with X-Men and Wolverine and Deadpool, why care about Infinite?
That's a good question, actually.
What reason is there to give a fuck about Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite?
If it shouldn't be the name of the title either.
It's on Xbox One now. It's not on PS3. That's what they're going to say.
I'm looking at some
Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3 is on Xbox One and PS4.
Yeah, but that's the older version being backwards compatible.
No, it's the new release. It's re-released.
They re-released it as an actual done from the ground up product on the PS4 and Xbox One.
I think it was just like a.
It's still a basic port, but it's a native. It's a current gen native game. It's not a backward compatible title.
Now, I'm saying it in referring to built from the ground up for the system,
yes.
So they can push how it looks nicer and whatever.
Yes, it is $24.99. You could even go to GameStop and get a physical version if you want, CJ, since you need your fucking discs.
I'm not going to buy a fighting game, but sure.
Why would you pay more than double the price for Infinite?
I thought you were saying. I thought you were about to say why, as in like, why don't you buy them?
I totally understand having physical stuff. I mean, look at the fucking shelves behind me.
Yeah, no, I meant saying, like, because I said I'm not gonna buy them because I don't enjoy physical or fighting games, and you were like, why? And I was like, wait a minute, I thought you were referring to why don't I like fighting games? It's like, because I suck at them. Oh, speaking of which, I'm looking at some interesting stuff. There's like 8 people that have already completed Tekken 7, and everybody's done it in like under 10 hours. Oh, wow. Apparently, it's a very easy completion for fighting game fans.
Well, I have mine showing up tomorrow, so I'm excited about that.
Get those cheese, Joe.
I don't know if I will, but yeah, I don't see the point in Infinite at this.
I don't.
The character roster has turned me off completely from the game. I can understand a smaller roster. They don't want everyone to be diluted. I can understand a heavier focus on the cinematic universe, but to completely alienate such a large portion of the audience who loves X-Men, and Wolverine was easily the most popular Marvel fighter in the series, just to spite Fox over movie rights? Fuck off. They lost a sale for me. And I'm the idiot who would have bought the $200 collector edition.
Well, I'm glad you're not wasting your money on that.
Such a massive disappointment.
Is the point.
It's just a saver of money. You don't have to spend your money on that. You can spend it elsewhere.
True. I'll spend it on Rock Band DLC.
Someone's getting that money.
Oh, man. So that's all the news I have. I don't know if there's anything else you guys want to...
I don't really think there's any news that I have, because there wasn't really that much news to begin with this week. No backwards compatible titles.
Yeah, no additions this week. I don't know. That's it.
Yeah,
the Game Pass...
There was news to you said it.
You both talked at the same time. I don't know what happened.
Go first.
I was saying, I didn't even know about news in general until you mentioned it. So, you know, I have nothing to follow up or add to that.
Just going to say that, the Game Pass released today as of recording it. So probably tomorrow.
I guess officially. I know Gold members have had it for a little bit now.
Yeah.
So non-Gold members, you could check it out. $10 a month. 112 or 100 something like that games. A lot of good shit.
That's pretty neat.
If you have a small Xbox One library or Xbox 360 library for Xbox One, definitely worth looking into for $10.
And if you have a small hard drive, don't bother.
Well, then get a bigger hard drive. I guess before we jump into reviews, we do have a tiny giveaway to take care of. We are offering up MOP Operation Cleanup on the Wii U, and we wanted people to email us and tell us why they deserved it. We got 2 emails, so both people are getting copies of the game.
No way.
Easy as that. First up is Daniel N., who says, what can I say? I like taking out the trash, literally and figuratively, but what better way to do than violently jump on the trash baddie Super Mario style? The garbage man would definitely be proud. Taking out the trash, taking care of business. Daniel N. is getting a copy of the game. And then, surprise, surprise, Oroto emails in.
Oh, my gosh.
And clearly gets a win here, but I will read the email anyway. I always trusted this janitor in my school. He always told me stuff. When the food was going to be good, when the teachers were planning to drop a surprise test, and sometimes when I skipped class, I also liked to hang out with him in his office and listen to the radio. That guy was all right. One day, though, while I was in the heat of a battle, a fight with another student, he tried to intervene and break up the punch match. By doing so, he pushed me so fucking hard, my foot got stuck in the floor water draining hole that was open, where all the dirt goes after they clean the bathrooms. I looked at him with a face that could be resumed in one word. Why? A single tear dropped from my left eye, and right there, as my feet met the mush inside the sinking hole, I didn't only lose a sock, I lost a friend. He tried to apologize later on, but I didn't give him the time of day. The pain was still too real. But eventually, and with a lot of loving and caring, I decided to give him a trial to prove his worth. I asked him to grab me a cup of coffee from the teacher's collective office. You know, the place where they go during breaks to hide so students don't try to shiv them in public. But anyway, he thought about it. One morning during class, I saw the motherfucker sneaking through the corridor, and I knew what he was up to. 5 minutes later, during break, he comes up to me, sweating balls with a cup of coffee. I grabbed his shoulder and gently said, "We're cool, man. We're cool." I never talked with him again, but that coffee was pretty good.
Jesus, what a great story.
That didn't at all tell us why you wanted the game, but you're getting the game.
Hey, well, with his streak being broke last week, I mean, he needs to start a new one.
Maybe he's hoping that this will be one step closer to mourning the loss of his dearly departed friend.
Very true. And then we have another contest going on. We're going to do that one probably for the weekend show. One of our review games, Speedrunners, that just came out, there is a deluxe edition available that includes all the DLC skins and trails and all that fun stuff. And we have two giveaway codes for the deluxe edition of the game, and we are taking emails for that now. And the goal there is to tell us what skin or trail you are most looking forward to.
I couldn't tell you because, disappointingly, I believe the YouTuber packs aren't on there.
I don't know.
On the Xbox at all.
I know they have three different skin packs and a Trails pack.
The Trails pack seems cool, though. I didn't know there was even Trails in the game.
Yeah. It's good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Which, anyway, I guess that could just lead us to reviews, huh?
Sounds about right to me. That's what I figured it was going to do.
Yeah, so we will kick things off with Speedrunners, developed by Double Dutch Games, published by Tiny Build. It released June 1st on Xbox One for $9.99, but is free as part of the Games with Gold program. There are also three skin packs and a trail pack for $2.99 each, or you can get the deluxe edition with everything for $16.99. Cutthroat multiplayer running game that pits four players against each other locally and or online. Run, jump, swing around, and use devious weapons and pickups to knock opponents off screen. One of the most competitive games you will ever play. I know Pernell and I both played this one, and CJ, you played it back on PC quite a bit, right?
Yep. I love that game on PC.
So we can all talk about it.
How exciting!
Yay! So, Pernell, you start.
Oh, sure. It's not the most complicated game to talk about, admittedly, but I would say to start off, if you have not had access to the PC version, but you have Xbox or PlayStation, you might have seen another game that sells on the system called Gianna Sisters Dream Runners, which to me, I think they designed that game with the intent of aping this one, which was out first.
Yeah.
But the way the game works is you are one of a number of different colorful comic book characters who are running a race around a pre-constructed circuit map, I guess I would call it. And the goal is to make all the other players scroll off the screen, which is kind of nifty in its own way. There are boost pads. There's an actual interesting grappling hook mechanic where if the ceiling is made for it, you can't just do it on any ceiling. Well, if the ceiling is made for it, you can throw a grappling hook to kind of launch yourself and swing, give yourself more added momentum.
Or change direction.
I don't know if I've ever used the change direction, but that would be a good use for it. Usually I'm just too busy like just trying to freak the heck out and just.
Or the best use for it is to right after a jump or a fall down, use it to boost yourself in the other direction, because it'll give you a speed boost if you use it to switch directions, like Joe was saying, while in midair.
But it's only if the ceiling permits use of it, right?
Yep.
Like you can't just do it.
Yeah, you have to do it on like the it's like a white dashing on the ceiling. It kind of shows where you can grapple hook.
Yeah, but it's definitely an awesome game. Like I played it on the PC with a bunch of friends before, and I played single player when I did it for the review. And in single player, there's like an experience point system where as you do the different missions, they give you experience points based on how you did how you did in the race, and you unlock new racers, you unlock new courses, and you unlock new weapon power-ups that can be collected and used against your opponents during a race. The characters themselves, there's nothing special about any of them. They're just skins and personality skins at that. But nonetheless, there's actually a number of really cool and hilarious characters in the game to dabble with. So as long as you're not... And actually, it kind of makes it nice because due to them not having power-ups, you don't have to worry about everybody fighting to just use the same guy because he has the best ability or whatever. It's just, who's cool with you? Which I can appreciate for sure.
I'm always the shark dude. I don't know about you guys.
I was the dude in the chicken suit for a while, and then I ended up, when the game launched, I picked up the one skin pack with the cat. Clearly, nice. I have to be the kitty.
I don't remember who I used, to be honest with you, in the original playthrough, but of course, in the main game, I used the storyline character, so...
Yeah, I did the full story mode. There's only four chapters of story mode, and each of the chapters has three stages of you against three others, and then a head-to-head for a fourth stage. So it's just 16 stages. It's a fairly quick single-player mode. It's nice that there is a single-player mode. I know some games, they would just be like, oh, well, this is a multiplayer-focused game, so just fucking play it with online and play with friends. So it's nice that there is some kind of single-player mode there to help people learn the ropes and get used to the game. They have four different difficulties. It's easy, medium, hard, and unfair. And unfair is fucking unfair. They're not lying about that.
It's like, I've heard everybody say that this game is a very easy 770 out of 1,000. It's just like, I want to try it, but I'm nervous that unfair difficulty is going to kick my ass.
There is a reason it's called unfair difficulty. I'll just say that. Although people basically got to learn all the tricks. So
yeah, there's two people so far on Xbox, and it's like, ugh. I mean, I guess it just all really comes down to learning the tracks exactly.
Yeah. If you get good, you're going to do good. So get good. Scrub bitch, I guess, is the...
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of memorization involved, because once you're in the lead and you're in front of the screen, you get very little planning time making decisions. But it's just, I don't know, like it's legitimately fun. I also kind of like, as if you do too well for too long, the screen will actually start to kind of get smaller and smaller.
Yeah, I do like that. I like the screen shrinking on you to... I guess after the first elimination or first two eliminations, the screen will start shrinking just so that the same two people aren't racing forever. If they're both
good. After no eliminations, if you last too long, eventually a timer will come up with 30 seconds, and once the 30 seconds ends, the screen will get smaller anyway if nobody gets eliminated.
So I do like that it helps keep the game moving along. I did have a really, really solid, like, even after the screen was at its smallest point, I was racing against the computer, and we had to go for, like, another 2 minutes.
There are some moments like that in multiplayer as well, what I was having with my friends. It's like, or my friend that was just like, holy shit, how are we still both in this map? Like, one of us should have died. There was points in which, like, part of our body would be outside of it, and we'd still not be eliminated, and it's just like, Jesus.
I didn't get to dabble in the online too much, clearly, because, you know, the game just released technically, officially yesterday. I did have it a few days early for review, And I basically just able to play against whatever handful of reviewers or streamers or YouTubers were out there. I had a handful of games. The one I just completely dominated this guy. And we played a handful of times.
Was it Shiz?
No, I wish. I don't remember who it was, but they have just casual gaming, and then they also have a ranked mode where you have to reach a certain level of experience before you're even able to do that, which I think is nice. That way,
yeah, that way you don't ruin your rank immediately.
Yeah, the people in ranked know what they're doing already.
Yeah, this game has some tournaments and shit too that I wouldn't be surprised if they joined like the or if they started having tournaments on the Xbox system for tournaments. However, the hell that
the whole arena system, it's perfect for a game like this.
That would be pretty neat if they started implementing that.
Very true. Given it's part of Games with Gold, clearly the verdict is to download it and play it.
Obviously. Yeah, pretty much. And even if you're watching this afterwards and you missed it, I would personally still give it a buy it.
So, yeah, for $10, if we're ignoring either the after it's out of the Games with Gold program or for people who don't have gold, for $10, Purnell, what do you think?
With gold, it's a definite grab it because you'd be a fool not to. But if you don't have gold and you don't have friends and you don't want to go online with the racing, then it's a try to not buy it. But if you have access and want to utilize that on that multiplayer, be it locally or online, it's a no-brainer grab. It's a great game for multiplayer.
And also, for $10, why wouldn't you just get gold and then download that and the other three games?
Well, that's what we're saying. We just said ourselves, you know, if they miss that window, then they're True. Looking at buying.
Yeah, if they miss the window, I still think that this game is absolutely worth it, considering the price on Steam is $15.
Yeah.
Like, this is one of those rare cases that the game's actually cheaper on Xbox. But I think that's due to their skins in the normal version on Steam that aren't in the normal version on Xbox.
Yeah.
Like, that kitty skin that you were talking about is not a skin pack on Steam. It's just in the game.
Well, I know other companies have done that. Like, they would release the quote-unquote full game, but still withhold a handful of skins as, you know, because they want to try making some kind of money out of this.
Yeah,
and clearly, for $3 a piece, the skins are totally down to if you want anything in there. It's nothing required by any means.
And it doesn't even change the game. It's just a visual only.
It's just basically just buy those if you want to keep supporting the game because you enjoyed it and you want to show them that it might be worth giving another game in the future with gold.
Or if you want to dress up as a kitty.
Mew, mew, mew.
And we need to get Tiny Build on the show again because I really want to talk to somebody that's done a game with the Golden Pass and in the past and see how much they can tell us about how those are selected. Because
I don't think they're allowed to say anything.
See, that's so annoying. I really want to know how that stuff works. Like, the only way to know that stuff would be to actually go out and get into a gaming or get into a game marketing team or whatever, and then try to get a game to become Games with Gold in the first place. Like, that's just, I want to know.
It's possible that they might be able to talk a little bit about how they were selected, but I know, like, any kind of contractual stuff or finances, like, they can't say shit. Because we had the guys from Chainsawsome Games who did, what was it, Night Squad?
Yeah.
Chainsawsome?
Yeah, and they couldn't say anything.
See, that's
if I remember correctly, that game was Games for Gold on this release month too.
Yes, it was. It was one of the few that did that.
Same with Zeros.
It's pretty cool when you see that. Yeah, Zeros, Night Squad, Super Dungeon Bros, World of Van Helsing, Death Trap, and this one now.
Yeah.
And Guacamelee Super Turbo Championship Edition.
See, I like when games launch as part of Games with Gold because then it gives guaranteed you, nobody has it.
Exactly. That's one bonus. And it also just, I mean, it gives you a chance to try something that you probably wouldn't have tried.
Yeah.
So it's
anyway, my verdict at $10, if you have friends to play it with for a party night or you're good playing online, definitely worth picking up. If you're more of a solo gamer, it's tough to justify.
You're here. I much agree. Much agree.
And I disagree with them and think it's a total buy it either way.
Well,
I enjoyed the campaign that I played on PC and I didn't mind. I think it was worth it.
if there were significantly more to the campaign, it might be different. But given that there's only four chapters with four levels each,
it's a pretty quick play.
Yeah, it's a quick playthrough.
But for $10, it's not as bad. At $15, I would be like, maybe not. But $10, then can't.
It's definitely something where you need to play it online because it is a blast when you have a game of four people playing.
Oh, Meg,
you don't even need that many people, too. If you just have, like, because I remember I would just play it with my one other friend, and we would still have some epic matches that were a hell of a lot of fun. So even if you just have one other friend.
But add two more people to that, and it gets more insane.
But you have to know two more people in order to add.
Or play randoms.
I mean, you can. Good luck having a great time and not getting pissed off at them for using a fucking ability that you didn't expect or something, like the golden hook.
Well, that could happen in any mode, really. I mean, whether you got people you know.
Yeah, but when it happens to you by a friend, you don't get mad. You're just like,
I still get pretty mad.
I don't get pissed at my friends like that.
Anyway, moving on. Next game to talk about tonight is called Shotgun Legend, developed by Jonathan Tyndall, published by Wastebasket Games. It released June 1st on Steam for $9.99. Eugene stumbles through a portal along with a truck rim. He finds himself in a strange land taken over by an alien race. Armed with his shotgun and an arsenal of alien technology, he must find the rim as it seems to be his ticket home. It's kind of like a redneck shotgun version of the original Legend of Zelda. And It's gameplay wise, it is very much the original Legend of Zelda game. You start off and there's a cave, and you go in the cave, and you know, you already started with a shotgun, and you basically just journey from dungeon to dungeon, going through traditional top down Zelda style, kill the boss, collect the piece of rim, and then and then move on to the next dungeon. In the vein of the original Legend of Zelda, there is zero hand-holding and a lot of aimless wandering and backtracking, which could definitely be frustrating to more casual gamers. Because think about it. In the 80s, when we first fired up Legend of Zelda, we didn't know what the fuck we were doing.
And there were no strategy guys. And all you had was that freaking hotline.
So you will start the game and you will just wander a lot. You end up taking a lot of damage from enemies, and the health drops aren't nearly as plentiful as I would have expected in the game. It does seem a lot more difficult than Zelda. When you die, you go back to exactly where you were at your last autosave, health and all. So there's been times where I would be going through a dungeon, and if you like pick up a key or an item from a chest or something, it'll autosave to keep your progress.
And that sucks.
I picked up a key when I had half a hit point left.
It was pretty much a done deal at that point.
I had to replay the one section at least a dozen times because it was like an area how there's like the little spike things where if you walk past them, they'll snap in together.
Yeah.
You had to walk through and hope that they didn't hit you. And I just, whether it was an enemy on the walk back or one of those things nicking me, it was frustrating as fuck that I was basically stuck in that area.
Ugh. I hate when games do that because it demands perfection just to get out of the quagmire you need to put yourself in.
I eventually did thankfully make it out of that area and continued on. The game has 10 dungeons to explore, so there's plenty of stuff to do in the game. 8 active items that you can switch between, whether it's like they have a cooler, like a beer cooler that you could store health in, which I thought was funny, or like a bow and arrow, just different power-ups, bombs, clearly. And then there's 8 passive upgrades. I wanted to go back and list some of the passive upgrades for the sake of the review, but I loaded up my game and my save file was gone.
Oh, great.
I don't know what happened. I had a good 2-3 hours into the game. I beat like 6 of the dungeons, started up the game, and there was no continue option.
Well, that's a shame.
So I could not, I did not feel like loading the game back up and starting fresh just so I could remember what a couple of the passive upgrades were. I know one was like a raft that you could travel between certain port areas, but I don't know what happened. I know on Steam it said that the game was accidentally released into full release instead of early access, and I don't know if that had something to do with it.
Maybe.
But it just sucks that I lost all my progress in the game.
Yeah, that really does suck. That's one of the most devastating things that can happen in the game.
Because I had a lot of time in there. Like, I did a lot in the game. A lot of aimless wandering around, too.
Leon, the problem is you get a lot of that time. If you did go back, you wouldn't have to aimless wander anymore, so you'd probably do it in a fraction of the time.
See, I could think that, but I know a lot of the dungeons I went to were, you know, I don't remember the order I went.
Ooh.
So I might remember, there's a dungeon over here, but I'll get there and be like, oh, well, this is the level 5 dungeon. I need something from level 3 before I could even possibly come here.
See, I guess that's one thing about Zelda that I kind of liked in regards to that. Like, well, remember, at least later games, they required you to almost have the dungeon item required to use in the dungeon.
Yeah.
You have to have it just to even get into it, so it clears it up right there on the spot.
Yeah, and with this one, a lot of the stuff is, oh, well, you found a dungeon, but you need an item to get into it. I guess it's to kind of just ease you into things, but it leads to a lot of needless backtracking and wandering. And then another gripe I have is after you beat a dungeon, there is no fast travel out. Like in Zelda, annoying. You pick up...
back out?
Yeah, you would pick up the piece of Triforce and it warps you to the dungeon entrance.
You gotta walk out.
Yep. You have to backtrack through the whole thing. Enemies do respawn after you've traveled a certain number of screens away, so you will end up having to fight your way out. And if the boss did a lot of damage to you and you didn't, you know, they have like a single use full health replenish right before the boss. If you already used that and some of the enemies have been kicking your ass on the way out, you might not make it out of the dungeon.
Damn.
I know someone on the Steam forums did bring that up, and he said that is something he's looking into addressing and adding into the game, so that may be fixed by the time this rolls around and you hear this and check out the game. For $10, it's, I don't know, it's an enjoyable game. It's a funny take on the series, like on the Zelda formula, but there's just a lot of stuff in there between the aimless wandering, between the gated off dungeon, so it's not like a free-for-all of going wherever you want, whenever you want. It feels very linear, but in a very open way, so you don't know it's linear. You just have to wander until you figure it out. And the general difficulty, it's a try it, but it's like try with caution. More casual gamers need not apply. That's for sure.
That makes sense.
Try with caution if you did.
I will say a couple of updates and fixes and tweaks to this. This could be an awesome game, but definitely one to keep your eye on. And since I guess officially it's in early access, definitely keep your eye on it. But as it stands, it's not a home run yet.
Hopefully that can change soon.
Fingers crossed, because a lot of promise there, that's for sure. Next game to talk about is called Gene Shift, developed and published by Knickknack Studios. It released May 23rd on Steam for $9.99. Gene Shift is a top-down shooter bursting with brutal gunplay and insane vehicle action. Unlock mutant skills and outplay friends in a tactical online combat. Then play the co-op campaign to discover unlocks, battle zombies, and, as always, save the world. Pernell, what'd you think of Gene Shift?
Gene Shift is an interesting little game. It has does a bit of throwing back towards the classic days of Grand Theft Auto. Like the one I mentioned earlier in the show that I was a big fan, I enjoyed the multiplayer component of that. It has that same top-down style, and the gameplay is pretty straightforward. It revolves around basically top-down piloting of vehicles, or being on foot, taking out human opponents, and I guess monster opponents like zombies. It has a sort of the single player component, at least, has a sort of, I guess I want to say, Half-Life-esque story to it, where you are a scientist and on your first day at work, all hell breaks loose and the test subjects get loose and you have to go track them down and murder them and glorious stuff.
Yay!
So it's aside from that, it's not too complicated. The way it works is, like, in the single player campaign, at least, you run around and you can find different weapons strewn about the different maps, either hidden or dropped from enemies that allow you to get different types of firearms and sub weapons like grenades and flash bombs and such. But you basically just, pretty much how that works out with that is, like, you pretty much go about collecting items to kill more guys and cross more checkpoints. And that's pretty much the main game. But then there's also, like, an ability system where you find abilities, like, on the ground, usually in, like, in specific points on the maps, though. But you find an ability, and it's almost like a magic system where you have mana and you can equip an ability. And by hitting the button, it will allow you to do certain things, like put up a special kind of, like, a reflector shield or give you more of a healing, just like a healing boost, things like that. And it's pretty cool how that is, because you can also kind of upgrade them via skill tree. So you get experience for each skill, and you can upgrade the different skills to be more powerful versions of themselves. And then all of this stuff, of course, translates to the multiplayer component, which, unfortunately, I suck at that kind of thing, so I didn't even bother with trying to do the online. But it looks like the game is heavily, it's like almost primarily based around multiplayer, kind of like how we were talking about with Speedrunner, how it has the short chapters with the intent of kind of giving you, like, just play around with the gameplay and then get online.
Yeah.
This, I think, is the same way with this campaign. There's 10 campaign stages, and then after that, it's like, well, just move all those ranking points. Oh, because the ranking, that you actually boost your ranking stat from the single player too, so it carries over to the multiplayer. So you beat the single player mode, it's like, okay, I'm ready for the campaign, and you just go in there and you go into deathmatch with your friends, or strangers rather. So it's surprisingly, like I said, it's surprisingly not a very complicated game. It's basically collect items, collect weaponry, collect sub items, fulfill objectives, whether it be just getting to the end of a stage or escorting through a stage, or setting off various zombie bombs, which is a very weird component I've never seen in these kind of games before, where what you have to do is you kill a number of zombies to collect their souls. And then when you have enough, you go back to a central spawn, a central point with the souls, and you detonate a zombie bomb, which kills all the zombies in the room. But otherwise, I'll just keep spawning ad nauseam.
Nice.
Very easy game.
Zombie bombs are always fun.
The best kinds of bombs.
Yeah, I think the game looks really cool. I enjoy the whole top-down classic GTA feel of the game.
Though I will say, though, this is probably more of a personal issue and not, you know, a person who's usually as typical or as good at this kind of stuff or used to it, but I didn't notice there was, like, any sort of, like, way to zoom in and out the cameras, but the way it happens is you control where you're aiming with the mouse, so the further away you move the cursor, the more the screen will also pan out. And more than a few times, I was disorienting the hell out of myself by causing that to happen. I was like, I just want to turn this way. Crap, I don't know where I'm at anymore. And I zoomed in. Oh shit! Like, it was just very, it messed with me a lot. But I think that was more so because I'm not used to games like that on a regular basis. So it just kind of messed with me. So it'll take getting used to for people who aren't used to that style of gameplay.
No. I know the game, I'm looking at the Steam page. It is in early access. He's asked how long it might be in early access. Amazingly, he started development of this game back in 2009.
Wow.
Yeah, it used to be called Subvane Mutant Factions. And it does have a free demo if you do want to check it out. He said, approximately how long will it be in early access? He said, I thought the game would take 2 years, and I'm still going 8 years later, so I'm clearly not good at estimating time. Gene Shift is ready, but why stop development so soon? It could become bigger and better with your feedback, so I'll keep working on it for some time. I know this is vague, so please only buy this game based on how it exists today, not how it may exist in the future. which I commend him for that.
Yeah, he outright tells people, I don't know how far along this is going to go or how long it'll take, which is very rare.
I enjoy that honesty. That definitely gets some points with me. He is hoping to have more vehicles, more weapons, more skills, more chemicals, more game modes, more maps, more cosmetic unlocks. You want hats? I can add hats.
That's funny.
To be clear, these are just examples. None of these are promises. So again, I love his honesty, which is awesome.
Laying it out on the table for you.
Asked if it will be priced differently after early access. He says, not sure, but the price might rise after the full launch. I believe early adopters should get a better deal as thanks for the support and feedback you provide. So at the early access price of $10, what are your thoughts on this one, Purnell?
I'd say, I think it's a good buy, to be honest with you. It was a fun style game. I didn't dislike it in the slightest. It's just a more along the lines of it has to be your style of gameplay, but I think by hearing this review and seeing screenshots, and also, of course, on Steam, they have preview vids even, you know visually what you're getting into. So with that all in mind, if that suits your fancy, I think it's worth the money.
And even better, if you're on the fence, as we mentioned, it does have a demo. I'm checking the page. It says, click download demo and the right to play multiplayer. So it's the multiplayer demo, which has, I'm assuming it includes the 5-on-5 multiplayer combat. He says it is free with no time limits.
Wow.
So
that's pretty good.
Clearly, so, I guess he fights like limits the weapons that the demo people can get or something like that.
I'm sure it doesn't include the campaign as well.
Yeah. But I mean, being that, like I said, it seems like it's primarily meant to be a multiplayer game. I think they got to neuter you in some way in order to make it like that, because it's awesome in a sense. It does a twofold effect. By making it multiplayer accessible demo, it allows you to pad the main lobby and stuff, because you got people who are learning about the game and are getting to play with actual human beings and not CPs and human players who are looking for a chance. That's more likely that other players will be online. But if they just limit the types of weapons you get, they'll be like, well, I hope you like the game. If you like the game, just realize how much damage you can do with the weapons that are actually helpful for winning actual matches. like you have the club and that's all you get. Hope you enjoy the game.
I will say, based on the dude's honesty and how he's handling this and what he's offering, I think I'm going to buy this game myself just to support. I don't know if I'm ever going to play it. But I appreciate what he's doing and how honest and upfront he is about everything. And I kind of want to support that myself.
That's good. Now Purnell has, or Purnell, sorry, excuse me, has no reason to shit on me for spending 50 cents on Rock Band.
Purnell, you won't believe how often he calls you Purnell, like Chris Purnell.
That's enough of a reason to shit on you. Let's be honest.
Hey, I never said the Chris Purnell thing.
Is Purnell going to be on? No, but Purnell is.
A couple of those times is because my phone auto-corrected it because it doesn't believe Purnell is a real name.
Sure.
But for the most part, I forget.
More like it believes Purnell is a real name because you type it so much.
because I was playing Evolve for fucking 90 years.
There you go, see? But yeah, I think it's a good buy. And I think if you're in that style of gameplay, you're going to enjoy this. If you have a hanker for the old classic days of GTA's top-down shooting and Chinatown Wars, get a little bit of a fix of that style of gameplay from this.
So man, Chinatown Wars was so fucking good.
That's one of the three DS games, not 3DS, one of the 3DS games I still own.
That game was legit. And at the time, it was awesome because, again, it was a return to form of the old GTA-style games, and they threw an awesome plot in with a great location and cast characters.
I didn't get very far.
It's delectable.
Anyway, next game to talk about is called Starballs, developed and published by Boulder Games. Released May 30th on Xbox One for $4.99, previously available on Steam and mobile. Starballs is an awesome puzzler game that follows three stowaways on a spaceship trying to use their unique skills to navigate the craft and escape. The 3D visuals are incredibly rich, the story is good, and there are plenty of levels, power-ups, and it is a must-play game. That's their description.
It's like they want you to know.
Yeah. Basically, it's space mini-golf, for the most part. It is a good-looking game for an indie game and a $5 indie game, and originally a mobile game. It's a pretty nice-looking game. It has 50 levels in it, and they can be replayed with time attack and score attack. There are 35 campaign levels, and then you can unlock an additional 15 if you can find the keys hidden in the levels. The gameplay is pretty much pull your analog stick back and then press the bumper button to fire. I kind of wish you didn't have to hold the stick back for the distance, because you can easily accidentally drift to the left or right, screwing up your aim.
Oh, that's not good.
Especially if you're holding back for a full strength one and you just accidentally drift slightly in a direction, it starts moving everywhere.
Does that ultimately go into power driving into like a freaking ditch?
Well, it's mini golf, so there it's not like there's a fairway or anything.
Oh, true, true.
Yeah.
But there could still be a ditch. I mean, I've played some pretty mean mini golf courses.
There are some levels where you can easily go off course. Thankfully, there's no like added strokes for going off course. It just resets you to where you were, and that counts as a stroke, but there's no like extra plus one or anything. Precision speed is tough, since it feels like even when the stick was tilted 3/4 of the way back, it was at full speed, and just it seemed like even the slightest change in speed would change the number of dots by like 3 or 4 instead of 1. So getting the exact speed that you wanted wasn't always the easiest. Once you finish the hole, based on the, you can pick up bolts and various like gears through the level to earn points. Based on your final score, you'll earn one of either bronze, silver, or gold medal, which gives you coins to buy more power-ups. There's a lot of different power-ups, like score multipliers, a magnet hole to, you know, if you're close enough, it'll just suck it right in. Turbo so that you can hit harder, brakes so you can actually slow your ball down. You can enable steering or jumping, opening all the doors in a level automatically, stuff like that. You can equip 2 of the powers, but as you unlock the other robots through the story mode, you can equip 3 and then 4. So clearly once you get that final bot, you're not going to ever mess with the other ones.
Screw that.
Achievements in the game are kind of goobered up, and there's a lot of uproar over the achievements in the game. First off, I played one of the bonus stages that I unlocked, and it ended up giving me the achievement for completing all 35 of the normal stages.
Wait,
what? Interesting.
Because the bonus stage was like level 37 or 38, so it just assumed that I played level 1 through 35 already. And just because of that,
easy achievements now.
Yeah, just because of that, to check, when I unlocked the last bonus stage, instead of playing any of the others, because I ended up beating the initial 35 stages, I unlocked level 50, I played level 50, and it gave me the achievement for completing all 15 bonus stages.
Wow.
Yeah, so there's some goobery going on with the achievements. Speaking of the achievements, people are losing their minds over some of the achievements in this game.
Yeah, understandably so.
You know, it has stuff like spend time in levels for like 5 hours or 10 hours or 24 hours, which is a lot of time. It goes up to 500 hours.
Okay, so this cumulative. I was about to say, is this cumulative or in one session? But yeah, clearly 500 hours implies it.
And not just in the game, in levels.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so you can't just sit on the title screen for a month and a half. You need to be in levels for a fucking month and a half.
Yeah.
They have a lot of... I feel weird saying this because obviously they should. It's their product. But they seem to have a lot of faith in this game.
Well, the other thing that really screws that up is the fact that a lot of people are getting every other achievement before even getting the 5 hours in levels achievement.
Yeah. And I can definitely see that. I unlocked most of the achievements aside from unlocking all the hidden stages because I couldn't find, or I either couldn't find or didn't see, like, 4 of the keys. Like, I know I have 11 of the bonus stages unlocked, but my progress only shows I have 10. So, again, I don't know what the fuck's going on with the achievement. I did ask the guy that I talked to with the game about it. I said, a number of our friends have been making a stink over the time requirement, so I figured I'd ask. I personally don't mind them because I'm not insane about achievements, but I know a bunch of our listeners like achievements, so I figured I'd ask. He said, great question. The vast majority of achievements will be completed once you reach around 4 to 6 hours of gameplay. However, I believe there is some achievement based on how many hours you put into the game, so avid game completionists might have a little more work to do if they want to acquire the time spent playing achievements. I said, haha, yeah, I know some people are going nuts over the spend 500 hours playing the game. Thanks for the info. He said, I understand the satisfying feeling of total completion, but whoa, hardcore achievement hunters really put themselves in some tedious and painful situations.
Yeah, that's. I wouldn't call it tedious and painful. I'd call it overdoing it.
So I don't know if this is like kind of like the Korok seeds in Zelda, where it's kind of like a fuck you.
Yeah, it's definitely a little too much.
Yeah.
When you can get every other... Shiz Blacka is actually at exactly what I'm talking about. He has every achievement in the game, aside from any of the time spent. He doesn't even have the 5 hours in levels. Like, yeah. That's when you know that it's gone a little too insane.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. But I don't know what they're thinking. I don't know if they're going to change it. I have no idea.
I mean, at this point, they're still able to because nobody's done it, so it's not like they're screwing over anybody that has done it, but still, I don't see it changing either.
Yeah. And then I ran into another fairly annoying issue. The first time I played it, I got about 15 or so stages in, took a break, went back. I was on stage 3.
I was just literally looking at a couple of posts on the forums on TA about it. Yeah. And yeah, a couple of people are saying that they lost save data as well.
I was annoyed, but I'm like, well, I wanted to put more time into it. I ended up beating the game because I mentioned I completed the 35 initial stages. I messed with a handful of the bonus stages. I just fired up the game. I'm on level 7.
Yeah, there's some saving issues, and that's really annoying as well. So, that can really screw up a game, because then it's like, well, yeah, but you don't get to keep anything you just did. You gotta restart it every time.
I did bring it up to them. I mentioned it, that I had an issue with the save data. I got a response that said, I'm really sorry about that you encountered a bug like that. I'll ask some of the devs to see if this is an issue, or perhaps even avoidable. Thank you for your feedback. So I can confirm that it has happened to me twice. And it's frustrating as fuck. Thankfully, the game itself isn't that long, and the achievements basically remember that I already beat all the stages, and they remember your progress in terms of hours spent and like the money that you or the points that you earn for those achievements. For $5, I think this is going to be one that gets a fuck it. Why not? Because it is cheap enough, and it's enjoyable, and it's fun. Hopefully this save bug gets figured out, because that could ruin a lot of people's enjoyment. We will update you if that does get addressed or fixed or whatever else. Even still, for $5, it's fucking $5, so it's fun. Have fun with it. And despite the fact that there's a couple achievements in there that are going to take you, you know, years to get...
Or just not bother with in the first place.
The game still does a really good job of sprinkling achievements on you constantly, which is a good feeling. So
if you're just a gamer score hunter and you don't care about actual completion percentage, it's like an easy 820.
Yeah. If you just and it's a fun mini golf game. So $5.
True mini golf game.
Yeah, $5, fuck it, why not? There's worse things you can do with $5. It's enjoyable, it's fun, I really hope they get that save bug issue fixed, because that's two games this episode that I have lost progress on.
Jeez. Well, I guess I would say it's worth a warning in general to say, well, if you buy it, don't invest too much time in the gameplay itself until you're checking for that issue to be resolved.
And again, thankfully, it's quick enough that, you know, I was able to beat the 35 initial stages fairly quick, that, you know, I lost the initial 12 stages or so. I lost that it was basically nothing. It's
probably like half an hour to get that back.
Yeah.
Like,
well, that's not bad. Then,
it's still frustrating, though.
Yeah.
Anyway, next game to talk about is called Hover, Revolt of Gamers, developed by Fusty Game and Midgar Studio, published by the Sidekicks and Plug-In Digital. Oh my god, that's going to eat up all the characters in the tweet. Released May 31st on Steam for $19.99. A console version is planned for Q4 2017. Experience the thrills of a fast-paced single-player and multiplayer parkour game. Join the rebellion and deride the security forces of an anti-leisure tyranny. Rise up to the many challenges of a futuristic open world, assemble your team, enhance your gear, and perform incredible tricks and combos. CJ, you get to talk.
No, I don't. Shut up. Joking. This game, straight up, as soon as you see it, any images or a video, you're going to immediately think, oh, this looks just like Jet Set Radio. And that's because, I really believe that it takes a lot of inspiration from that game. But they threw their own twist on it and made it an interesting little game where I guess he's the mayor or leader, president, whatever you want to call him. I don't really remember what they referred to him as. But he's decided to make a law that is against anything that's fun. You're not allowed to be seen having fun. There's cameras that if you're going too fast, running around or anything, it'll lock off an area because it's like you're having fun and you're not allowed to do that. And so that gives you a little interesting story to follow through with some interesting and really wacky characters. I'm a little bit disappointed that they don't have voices, because I think that they could have done some really wacky and out there voice tracks with this game. Kind of like some of the characters in Sunset Overdrive. Speaking of which, this game does feel a little bit similar to that too, with being a third-person parkour game that you can grind on a lot of stuff and do tricks, almost like a skateboarding kind of game, except you don't have a skateboard and instead your shoes do all the work. So far from what I've played, pretty much every mission revolves around just racing and hitting, and the races are really easy so far. So I'm hoping that later in the game they get hard, but, you know, I feel like this game's pretty dang long, so I got as much time as I could in before a review. But the characters that you race against, the AI, are just, like, kind of dumb and get stuck for a second, and then that gives you the chance to get right past them. I don't know if the AI are just dumb or if they're making it a little bit easier towards the beginning of the game. But it's a little bit weird that I can finish the track like 20 seconds before they would. Like, I think that's a little too much leeway.
Yeah.
The racing courses are interesting, and there's a lot of them that share the same areas, because it's just in the first area of the game, it's just one town, and so there's all the races. Like, some of them take a little different courses that cut through areas you've already been, making little interesting tracks, and ones that you have to jump all over the place, and other ones that you just run in a circle, like a circuit, almost like a NASCAR race, except, you know, you're running. But there was one race on the highway where it was just a circle around the highway, and you could hit these speed boosts that made you run almost like 55 miles per hour. And it was, you would have to corner and take it just like a NASCAR race. And it was actually really, really cool that the highway had those boosts. There was one thing that I didn't expect with the game, and that was the large multiplayer focus. Because, I mean, looking at the screen and the HUD being very, very cluttered, you immediately think, wow, this looks like an MMO screen. And then you realize when you get in the game, it feels a lot like an MMO with just the random people you see walking around. Like, you don't just join a game and see you like friends or whatever, or join like a server. It's like, there's just a bunch of random people doing their own thing. They can interfere with your missions by joining the race, and then you have to beat them too, which is how I lost my first race. Because I was like, wait a minute, this guy can just join me and then beat me, and then I lose the race and I have to restart? Interesting. So there's actually a lot of a multiplayer focus, and the game says that there's single player, so I'm guessing there's a way that you can just like turn off the ability to join other people. But I thought it was actually really cool that other people can just join in your game and have fun, and you can meet all these people. There's a little text, even a little thing like in MMOs where you can talk to people through the text in the bottom left, I believe. It's just like the whole screen looks like an MMO screen, which I think I can get behind pretty well. I like it. At first I thought the screen was too cluttered, and then I realized once I got there that it's fine. The controller support is a little bit odd, because while it does support specific controllers, it still doesn't register that those are really the controllers. Like, in the prompts, it'll tell you, like tutorials, that'll tell you what button to press for stuff. It'll be like joystick button A, or I mean, not A, 1.
You really got to figure out what's going on with your mic.
So that was his microphone?
Yeah, that was him. That was him.
Something I can do about it.
Continue.
Anyway, what I was saying was, like, in the tutorial menus, it doesn't actually show the button that you're supposed to press, but instead, like, joystick button 1.
Really? It's doing it again? What the fuck? Normally it doesn't do it, like, and then immediately do it again.
I don't know. Maybe it's just the mic volumes. I think it might be the volume's too high, and it's starting to fuck up because of it. So, anyway, I'll move a little bit further from my mic and see if maybe that fixes it. But let's try this sentence for the third time. Okay?
Go ahead.
You already messed up. Too late.
In the tutorial menus, the buttons on the controller do not show up as the correct buttons, but instead joystick button 1 and stuff like that, instead of like A or Y. There's also a lot of controls on the controllers that do the same things, like A jumps and so does RT, and X tricks and so does LT. So, because I guess there's just not that many different controls in the game. Nah. But it's interesting that it has controller support, but it's weird about it. Honestly, I like the game. I love the visuals.
It's a great looking game. I love the cell shaded style.
Yeah, it's great. The music is awesome. Like, it's so pumping during a race, and it's just really cool. It's like electronic music, but it's really fucking awesome. That sounds just like that. It's constantly like boogie woogie woogie woogie.
Like everything I'm seeing about this game, and even with the visuals, and you're telling me about the soundtrack, it just feels Jet Set Radio.
Yeah, I mean, if you like Jet Set Radio, or even Sunset Overdrive is a great comparison. It's very similar to that. I think you're really going to get into this one. It's a very interesting concept. It has an interesting storyline that I'd like to follow some more. The characters are cool, but I do wish that they had voices that were wacky and out there, because I think that that would work very well for this game. The character design itself is actually really cool, and the ability to unlock more characters is really cool. Overall, I mean, $20 is a little bit pricey, but considering how much content you get, I think it could be worth it, depending on how much you're into this niche style of games. Like, there's not that many out there that are like this.
It has a launch sale until June 7th for $15.99, if that helps matters.
I mean, while it's on, yeah, it ends June 7th, so there, you got a few days to pick it up if you're on the fence about it.
Week.
And the official soundtrack, I believe, is totally worth the $6.99. Like, the soundtrack is great. I think I'd have to give this game a recommended try. It's really cool. I don't think everybody's going to be into it because there's a lot of people out there that didn't like games like Sunset Overdrive or the parkour style games. They want more action, more shooting. But if you're... What were you saying, Parnell?
No, I jokingly said they're missing out. They're like, they just want more action and more shooting, less parkour. It's like, what? Dude, man.
Yeah, I know, really. I don't understand that, but whatever. Some people can't focus on two things at once either. Like jumping and shooting in other games.
That was tough, though. That was a really tough component for Sunset, but still,
missing out. That was easy. Anyway, the game itself, recommend to try it. I think it's worth checking out. I'm interested to see if it, when it comes to console, if it's just as good, runs just as smoothly. Hopefully it does. I think the game is pretty neat.
Cool. All right, next game to talk about is called Dragon Bros, developed and published by Space Lizard Studios. It released May 31st on Xbox One for $9.99, previously available on Steam for $8.99. Robots are everywhere, destroying the place you used to call home. The only cure for this terrible mess is to wipe out those cranky machines with bullets and big explosions. Play as a young dragon in this 2D retro run-and-gun adventure in co-op or solo. Free your dragon mom from the evil Mechachilles, or Mecha-something, whatever. it's a standard 2D shooter platformer. There's only four worlds in the game. The first world has three stages and a boss. The others only have two stages and a boss. They do try to mix it up a bit by having some bonus stages. Like there's a, each world has a handful of mini stages of like solving a certain puzzle to get through it, of like shooting certain things and just basically learning game mechanics. There's also a mini stage in the style of Space Invaders where there's enemies coming down and you have to shoot them from below. And then Pang, like the balls bouncing, you have to shoot them and they split and you have to keep shooting them. So they do throw stuff in there to keep you entertained and keep things, you know, mix it up a bit and add a little bit more value to it. Each stage also has five difficulty levels, so you can replay that way. Overall gameplay is just standard, you know, shoot things and get through the level and don't die. You can find a handful of different weapons as you go through the stages. Each have limited ammo. Very similar, like a Metal Slug, where you could find extra weapons around. And after they're gone, you're just back to your standard weapon. The game is short, though. That I think the biggest problem is that I completed the game in 90 minutes.
Wow. Yeah, like, that's really quick.
Beat the final boss in 90 minutes. And I actually replayed the first stage a handful of times because there was an achievement to beat the first stage in like under 2 minutes and 40 seconds, something like that. I don't remember what the time was, but I was like 10 seconds away. I'm like, oh, I could get this. And I kept trying. I kept getting like a second away. So I kept trying and trying until I got it. Cause then at that point it was just like, for pride.
You're too stubborn. Yeah, you're too stubborn not to get it at this point. At this point, it's just like, I will have it no matter what.
Yeah, but the overall, the game length is just, it's a short one. There are only...
You think it was probably meant to mimic like a game more meant for speed runs or the intent of just being similar to like classic games like how Contra would work, how it's just meant to be like eight stages that are meant to be replayed over and over again, stuff like that.
I think it'd be more along the lines of something like the old school games than a speedrun focus game. And then it does have the more difficulties to, you know, so you could learn the game and get better, and it encourages replayability. But if you're just looking to play through the game and you're done, this is something you could do in an afternoon. The game only does have 11 achievements. And in the one playthrough on easy, I got 9 of them for 700 points.
Nice.
The other two are to beat every stage on the hardest difficulty, which is tough, and then to kill 9,000 enemies. And after completing the game, I was only at 20%. So this is something that will be grindy and require a number of repeat playthroughs to finish that one off. I would imagine the goal for this would be to beat the game on all of the difficulties.
But yeah, good luck doing that.
If you're masochistic, you could just go in on the hardest difficulty and try running through it. It's a fun game. It's a cute game. It's, yeah, it's enjoyable. The art style is nice, but it's short. That's the biggest issue I have with it, is just how quick you could get through it. For $10, yeah, it's a good try. It's a solid game. It's something that you can just have a fun afternoon with, and if you have a friend, it's fun co-op as well. It's nothing magically special, but it's enjoyable. So,
is it magically delicious?
I wish.
Anyway. Yeah, tell me about it all.
It's $10. Well, yeah. So it's fun.
Now, I can see, again, if you're just looking for a cool thing to do for an afternoon or something. And again, with the replay, if you're, again, if it's like I said, contrary to S-style logic where you want to just replay it later anyway, just on a harder difficulty or whatnot.
Yeah. In-game instincts in chat asking, easy gamer score. Like I said, in an easy playthrough, I got 9 achievements for 700 points. The one to kill 9,000 enemies is easy enough, but grindy. And then the one to beat it on the hardest difficulty is going to be tough. So it's easy gamer score, but a tough completion.
Okay. So I can see that.
Yeah, that was a quick review. Quick review for a quick game, I guess.
Yeah. It took about as much time to do a review as it did to beat the game.
Close, yeah. Oh, next game to talk about is called Pax Nora, developed and published by Desert Owl Games. They released May 23rd on the PlayStation 4 as a free-to-play game with microtransactions. Delve into classic turn-based strategy gaming with elements of tabletop miniatures, fantasy RPG, and card-collecting style gameplay all wrapped into one. Purnell, what did you think of Pax Nora?
How to go about talking about this game, because you know how I feel about them FTPs, but this game, I'll ignore the free to play and just talk about the game for now, and then I'll try to inject it as I need to. So the game itself is a combination of like something similar to Magic as well as like say Tactics Ogre. So you are in charge of controlling an army. And the goal is to take your army and crush the other army's castle or fortress. And you do so by taking cards from your deck that represent different characters and the like with different abilities and powers. You place them on the map to engage in combat. You have a resource called Nora, which is what you use to summon the guys. You get a certain amount every turn. But you can also take over Nora spawn points or Nora mines on the map to increase the amount you get per turn. And the computer opponents or your regular opponents attempting to do the same thing to monopolize them. So you're fighting over these points of currency. I guess think like mining points from like StarCraft or something. So you're ultimately using spell cards, which can be used to damage enemies on the map based on the conditions of the card. There are champion cards, which are your summonable units. There's equipment cards, which you can use to equip your units to give them either higher power, better movement, or new abilities, or a variety of other functions. And there are relics, which you can place on the map itself to give you different boons. Like you can, say, place a banner flag on the map, and that banner flag will give every unit on the map a 5-point heal per turn. One thing I liked about this game that I thought was pretty cool compared to games like this that I'm used to is that you can have multiple types. Like, you get a guy, right? You have like a base set of abilities. But you can upgrade them by using them multiple times in the map or by free-to-play money. You can upgrade the guy to give him access to upgraded abilities. So you'll have upgrade tier 1 and upgrade tier 2. And each of those upgrade tiers has, like, say, 3 to 4 abilities on there. And you can choose one of them from each category to sort of customize the unit. So no two units have to be the same type of unit. So you know, same art, but they have different summoning costs, and they have different combinations of abilities made for that character. So I thought that was pretty awesome to do. You can there's a decent tutorial that you can play through, and then like a number of like many factions that you can beat after that. Where if you complete those, you get a free like I guess booster like starter deck related to each of the factions you beat. So they start you out with by playing the game with a decent number of different card types, or card decks you can play with. But once you get past that part is where the jing bling bling comes into play. To give you an idea, I did see, I mean, I didn't sit down and write down like a whole tier of like how many decks of cards are cost this much, how many decks of cards cost this much. But I did see one like purchase that I could make like was a deck. But when you translate the amount of coins it costs to the amount it costs to buy them, it was $50. So you can win money and stuff in game. Like you can win owl tokens, which is one of the current. There's two currencies in this game. I should point that out. You can win owl tokens from doing normal matches in the game and winning. And there's just is also gold, which you can earn by completing daily missions. Every day the game gives you a different set of missions to complete, like, you know, win a match with this type of unit, or, you know, push a guy back this much, or win with this much mom, with this much Nora in your bank, stuff like that. Each mission is worth a certain number of gold coins, which you can then use as one of the two currencies to shop at the marketplace for new cards. So
it sounds like the real money isn't required, because you could earn it by grinding in the game. It's just significantly quicker to do real money, which I guess is the whole point of microtransactions.
Yeah. For me, it usually comes down to like, how hard is it to make the money in game? Yeah. Like, obviously it's got to be easier to get it with money, because that's what the incentive is, but it has to be semi-realistic that you can actually acquire the funds to buy things. You know what I mean? And I didn't get enough into this to be able to make that statement, because I'm sure if you do good, if you have number of good wins against human players or high rank wins, you'll probably get more money than if you're winning against like scrubs or something like that, or from the story mode. Because there's like a bunch of campaign modes too, you can kind of dabble in with like a single player thing to just kind of get your feet wet and learn the game. But yeah, I feel like they do at least give you enough decks and cards to start, that if you do it being a free-to-play game, you really don't have much to lose by just booting it up and getting the gameplay itself a shot, because the gameplay itself is solid. The music accompanying the gameplay will put you the fuck to sleep, but the game itself is fun. And for the record, why do these game companies keep doing that? They make these games with, you know, they're meant to be, the gameplay is meant to be what engages you, which means that they're not vibrant and active on the screen themselves. And then they give you music that is sleep inducing. Like, at least make the music fast paced to keep you lively. I don't know, but I don't know, something. I don't
just know, what license the soundtrack from Slayer.
I would take that. It would keep me the hell awake as I'm playing the game. It would help, you know. But yeah, the music put me the hell asleep. But the gameplay itself is solid. So it's not, I mean, and also I forgot to mention, there's one other thing I liked about the game too, which is that they have mounted units, which can be annoying because they take up more than, they take up like four squares instead of one square. But when you get killed, when that unit gets killed, the mount unit, the mount dies and the rider stays around, and they're like two units in one. They cost more to summon, but that's the price you pay for giant horse walking men people.
True. So as a free to play game, is this something that people should check out?
I believe they should. If they like strategy games, if they like Magic the Gathering, you know, things of that nature, hell, even Yu-Gi-Oh, I would say is definitely worth giving it a solid go. And since it's free, it's not going to hurt you. You can evaluate for yourself if the free to play is too much for you, or if it's just the right amount. And you can also evaluate how long you want to play with what you can start the game with. Because like I said, they give you a fair amount just to dabble to start the game. So I'd say it's worth giving it a shot and engaging for yourself how you feel about the purchase mechanics.
Sounds good. The hell was that?
That wasn't me.
Sour Patch Kids, baby.
Ah, nice. See?
Look at him. And you're complaining about my mic.
Yeah, because your mic lasts like 10 seconds of...
Yeah, but the viewers like hearing that.
No, nobody likes to hear that. No, likes to hear that shit.
Starring Joe! CJ's mic!
I sent you a sound clip of it, CJ. You know how grating it is.
I know, it's amazing.
Fucking fix whatever the problem is.
I can't fix it.
Save your pennies and get a new computer instead of buying Rock Band for 50 cents.
I'm not fucking buying a new computer over a microphone.
Could you just replace the microphone?
I do that, and every time the same problem comes back. It's the same problem I had with the last one.
Take it to Geek Squad and be like, why does my computer do this shit?
I'm not taking it to Geek Squad. That costs like 200 fucking bucks.
Then find someone who's good with computers.
My dad's great with computers.
Then ask your dad why it fucking does it.
Probably just because the mic is going bad.
You've had it not even a year.
Yeah, but it's also, it was a cheap mic. It probably is going to break. I'll probably have to buy a new mic.
Well, then you can buy yourself a better one, because I'm not buying you another mic. Yeah,
no, I'm not going to ask you to buy me one, but it might be a while.
Punk bitch. Stop buying shit you don't need and get a better mic that you do need.
Well, I mean, need is a strong word.
I don't have room for statues. I can't afford a mic. But I got an idea. Let me buy 10 gays off of Amazon that take up shelf space.
You're telling money. The guy who brought you onto his show that a mic isn't important for a show that requires a good mic.
I can just talk from outer space. It'll be fine.
Oh, Christ.
I'll just whisper through, like, I'll whisper to my sound card that you seem to think that I have for some reason, even though sound cards aren't in computers anymore.
Dude, I don't know shit about computers. Never claimed
sound cards
I do.
Haven't been in computers in like 10 years, but why not?
I don't know that shit. I don't know anything about computers. Just, I know my computer doesn't go when I'm talking. So fucking fix it.
Well, at least my computer can actually run games.
Now,
I guess our computers just have different strengths and weaknesses.
Your computers are going to start gargling when you play games. Too. No,
I don't hear the gargle. Only you guys do.
All right, next up, we have two games to talk about, and I am tagging out Purnell and CJ, and I'm bringing in our friends Chris Taylor and Catherine Batty. How are you two doing today?
I'm good, but my name is Batty.
Batty.
Batty has two T's.
See, I ruin every pronunciation on this show.
Yeah, everything. At first he called me Chris Fitzgerald.
I did.
It's not even close to how my name is pronounced.
I think I called you Lawrence, something like that.
Nice.
I don't know. I think I was drunk when I met you, wasn't I?
Oh, yeah, you were very drunk. You remember that, yes. We were drunk and hanging out with Mustin.
That was a fun night at MAGFest all those years ago, back in the Hilton. We go way back, Chris Taylor.
We're as old as the Hiltons, my friend.
Christ Taylor.
Y'all are dorks. I'm just saying.
Christ Taylor.
So we'll kick things off with Chris. You were here to talk about Alchemic Joust, developed by Lunatic Pixels, published by Lunatic Pixels and East Asia Soft. It released November 22nd on PS4, December 16th on Steam, and it is getting a physical release on PlayAsia for $19.99, which is why we're talking about it now, because it's getting, you know, physical. They're trying to get the hype up again. Limited to only 1,888 copies, and again, it is exclusive to PlayAsia. Alchemic Joust is a 2D action strategy game where you discover new skills by combining the ones you already know. Command your elements or your elementals and support them with a wide variety of skills. Control the arena and crush your opponents in one-to-one encounters. Chris Taylor, what did you think of this?
Well, Joe Fitzgerald.
I believe it's a silent E.
Oh, okay. Joe Fitzgerald.
Fitzgerald.
Well, yes, the game Alchemic Joust is pretty good. Let me break it on down. Now, okay, so when I first played this game, I was like, is this another game from the Plutobi people? Because this is like the second game I've played in short order that has the kind of paper, rock, scissors system of like elemental cancellations, things like that. And then actually I found out, I guess it's these guys' first product
from
Strategic Pixels. I've looked them up and I can't find anything else on their Twitter or anything like that. So I guess these guys are new on the scene. But you wouldn't know it from playing this game because everything is like really solid and looks really good. So basically, yes, what it is that it's a game that for whatever reason, there's not really much in the way of story offered, but several raindrops and tiny flames and wind things and stones own a castle. And they built their castle about 30 feet away from another castle against their wishes, whereupon the other castle decided to send all of their little elemental beings a walking across that 30 foot sort of area to crash into the other castle. So I really would have liked to see more drama unfolding here, but this is what we get. It's basically a tower defense game. And at the same time, it's tower defense in the sense that you have to basically send your guys after their tower without getting your tower destroyed. That's the old formula. Now, the twist on this one is that they add in an elemental wheel. That is to say, you send your fire guy out they send their fire guy out and you send your water guy out and your water guy cancels out their fire guy. You're like, well, okay, I guess I can cancel their guys out and try and send mine as fast as possible because they're on a timer, as you know, so you can't just send everything out at once. And while maybe the first couple of levels you can, you know, send your water guy out and then send another water guy out to walk past the fire guy and then into their castle, you quickly realize that you're not going to get very far just sending out one water guy at a time and canceling out their guys. It makes the rounds last too long because you're just in stalemate. So what they've done is that at any point between stages, well, it's a limited number of time, but times that you earn after each stage, almost forgot. But basically, after every stage, I think win or lose, you get a certain amount of turns in the alchemy lab. And in the alchemy lab, you can combine the four elementals that you start out with into combination elementals that are more powerful and also contain properties of each each lower level. So here's an example. So you combine your fire guy and a water guy in your alchemy lab. And what happens? But steam, as you would imagine. So you get a steam character. So now you have that steam character who, of course, being a higher level, takes a little longer to cook up, but in the actual game. But now let's say the castle on the other side of the field sends out the fire guy, and now you've got your steam guy that goes out, and when they connect, the water part goes away. And then it becomes a fire character, which then continues unabated towards their castle. So it's
or
like
unabated.
Unabated, exactly. with three T's and a silent Q.
Yes.
And so then you got your you got your fire guy marching happily towards there. So it's kind of like it's combining two characters at once. And probably about three or four levels into this game, I was combining stuff into, like, level 5. I was combining, you know, I was combining lightning with a, you know, lightning is an energy that you get from combining two characters, and I combined that with a steam and got a thundercloud, which is like a level 5 character that, you know, and whenever you combine like these higher level characters, you start to see things that aren't just characters that you send after the other castle, but you see things that augment the field. So said thunderstorm can actually zap enemies of a certain element for a few turns. It can take out multiple enemies. And there are other cards, like, it then almost becomes sort of a Magic the Gathering type thing, where you can actually sort of alter the field with some of these higher level characters, as well as sending out your characters to destroy their castle. And suddenly you realize that this game is super deep. Like, this is just, like, the first 30 minutes of the game type stuff. I was already, like, combining characters to augment the field, as well as sending out level 2s and level 1s and, like, kind of strategizing. And it also works on two levels, so, like, your wind element goes over the air, so nothing on the ground can touch it except for something else that's in the air. So then you have, like, two levels of battle going on at the same time. And, yeah, by the time you get a few levels in, suddenly you're just, like, going nuts with the strategies.
Nice.
Yeah.
I gotta say, I love how the game looks too. It's a beautiful game.
It's really pretty and it's funny. Like, it's got a lot of good flavor text. The characters are super cute. Like,
super cute.
Yeah, like, you wouldn't expect in a video game to be going, aw, at a clump of lava, but game has you doing it.
Clump of lava in the whole world.
Yeah. It's magnanimous. Anyways. Yeah, I know.
Oh, Lord.
So basically, it's tower defense, but you kind of get to build all of your own parts. And the cool thing is that the game, it won't just tell you, like, there are obvious ones. Like, if you just combine the first four elements, like, pretty much every combination gets you a thing. But then past that point, not every combination gets you something. Sometimes you fail, and it actually has, like, funny flavor text for when you fail, too, which is pretty funny. You can be combining, like, level 1 stuff with level 5 stuff and creating new things. And the game only gives you a hint after you fail 5 times. So it's one of those things where you can't just kind of, again, because your turns are limited in the alchemy lab, it's sort of like, how clever can I be to get the most out of these turns before I have to go into battle with whatever I've got, you know?
Nice.
And, yeah, so it's really, it was surprising, actually, I thought, for being like, well, I guess it's going to be a physical game, but, you know, it really did feel like a full game, even though the playing field itself is just a simple, you know, two towers going at it. And then, you know, of course, a menu-based lab.
Yeah.
And it also, another interesting thing is that, and I really haven't seen this in RTS or you know, tower defense games, but you get to assign, I think, about 8 different characters. Well, there were question marks around some of the menu options, so I imagine some things become unlocked, such as, like, more character slots. But each character slot is accessed, like, each little character that you can send into battle or augmentation or whatever, by a button press. So it's, like, down on the pad summons a fire, left on the pad summons a water, and up summons a wind. And then, like, holding the left shoulder button and pressing up summons something else. So it's just, like, it's all, you don't ever move, like, a cursor around or anything like that, which is something that I find useful when it comes to, like, these console strategy games, because I don't like moving the stick around to move a cursor where, you know, I feel like I need a mouse.
Yeah.
So it's kind of nice that the action is more snappy like that. It's a thing I liked about it. Also, the soundtrack is just great, but I always say that.
Well, you are a musician, so I would kind of expect you to be into the music stuff.
Yeah, it's a nice, jaunty, heroic, like, epic theme for moving adorable ass water droplets across the...
Adorable ass water?
Yeah, actually, there are some combinations you can make.
Is there like a stink bomb combination?
There is a mud character that looks a little, looks a little ass watery.
I think the craziest thing is for how good the game looks and how deep it is, Lunatic Pixels is a two-man studio.
That's insane. I can tell now why they sort of reuse the backdrops and things like that. It looks like a whole lot of work went into the mechanics for sure. And it's like, instead of making a bunch of cheap or, rushed looking like scenes and things like that, like they just focused on the simple like setup that they had and made it just look as good and as functional as possible. Yeah. That's what it seemed to be anyway. That's impressive though. Two man studio. I would not have guessed that.
Yeah. Good looking game. So for $15 digital, either on PS4 or Steam, or for $20 for a physical PS4 version, what is your verdict on this?
Obviously, you're going to want to buy the physical version for $19.99 because those things tend to become quite pricey once they sell out. Like 20 years from now, you'll probably be sitting on like a $1,000 disc or something. I don't know. But...
And you'll have like three of them that you found at your local game store. I don't know what that store is, but you fucking find everything there.
I don't know. I luck out. I think that's what it is. I think it's because I refuse to spend a lot of money. You spend
like every other day there.
Yeah, that's true as well. And so does Catherine, actually.
I don't know what you're talking about. I never go to a video game stores.
Right. So $15 digital, of course, I mentioned before my Guruman review that's more than I ever tend to... No, I think it said Ease Origin. Anyway, $15 is more than I ever tend to spend on a digital-only game. So to say that I recommend this at $15 is pretty high praise, and I do. I do recommend it at $15.
Nice.
Definitely, if you are the kind of person who likes to get into the sort of unlocking all the possible things... Because as I understand, the game tells you that there's over 100 combinations. I think it's actually pushing closer to 200 of elements to unlock. And you have to do this stuff just based on your own creative moxie and replaying levels. So in that sense, it's like the replay value is there. It's all built in. You could, if you are the kind who likes strategy, tower defense type stuff, and it... Remarkably, well, because you can select the difficulty before every single stage. So if you want to just kind of breeze through it, you actually have that option. So it's something that you can play either as a casual or a hardcore. So, I mean, I couldn't think of a better endorsement as far as that goes.
Nice. I will include a link to the Play Asia webpage for the game. A heads up that it is... in pre-order stage right now, and their pre-order allocation is sold. So when the game officially releases, they might have a couple extra copies. If you're quick enough, you might be able to jump on it. But even if not, $15 digital. So
yeah, or $200 on eBay apparently.
Yeah, that always works too.
Yeah, why not?
Whatever helps you play the game, right?
Exactly.
And then next game to talk about is called Oceanhorn, Monster of the Uncharted Seas, developed by Corn Fox and Brothers, published by FDG Entertainment, released May 17th on the PlayStation Vita for $12.99. Oceanhorn, Monster of Uncharted Seas, combines captivating storytelling, breathtaking 3D visuals, and exciting gameplay into an epic action-adventure experience. In the game, you explore the islands of the Uncharted Seas, a world filled with many dangers, puzzles, and secrets. Catherine, this one was all you. What did you think of this?
Okay, so this is a lot like Zelda, I'm told, but I've never actually played a Zelda game.
What?
I'm playing Triforce Heroes right now, but I've never played any of the Zelda games. So anytime I come across a puzzle, I keep forgetting that bombs exist. And I'll be like, I'm stuck on this puzzle, how do I do it? And Crystal's like, have you tried using a bomb? I'm like, no, but I got bombs ages ago. Why would it? Oh. And then I move on. As you said, the game is all about, there's collecting four emblems of things. It's like the emblem of the forest, emblem of dirt, emblem of other things. And you go to, you're guided to go to different islands. And as you explore the islands, you can, which are all open, you can find treasure chests and go exploring and get killed by ogres that just won't leave you alone. But really, I liked how the game started out, because the tutorial took place on the island that your father, who abandoned you in the middle of the night, told you to go. He's like, hey, go to this island. Okay, see you, kid.
Peace.
And I don't know what happened to your mom, but you have her necklace, and her necklace guides you to places, so she's probably dead. The emblems that you find at the four emblems that you find, they're supposed to lead you to the giant monster ocean horn. And they are not easy to find. I just barely was able to find the first emblem after dying six times fighting the big boss that was guarding the emblem. And, you know, tentacles are cheating, is what I have to say about that first boss. But it's really fun. I was actually playing it while not listening to Christo's review.
So you're playing it right now, aren't you?
Well, not right now, because I'm talking, and then I'll get distracted, and then I'll just stop talking, and I'll go back to playing. Cool things that I really like about the game are, you can go back and forth between the islands anytime. A thing I don't like is that you have to go backwards to get items to go forward sometimes.
That's kind of a staple of the genre, though, with a lot of backtracking and re-exploring and stuff like that.
I prefer to do the re-exploring on my own because I want to, not because I have to.
Makes sense.
But even beyond that, it's pretty straightforward where you're supposed to go most of the time. So it's not too much backtracking. But when you're on the big world map, it shows you a percentage of how much of the island you've explored. So you can know how, so you can see how close you are to finishing the exploration. There's bombs to blow things up, which I like blowing things up. Except that I blow myself up a lot, because you have to throw the bomb when you're running for it to go away from you. Otherwise, you'll just put the bomb on top of yourself. But it's really fun, and I'm really enjoying the game. The music is so pretty. I really dig the music.
I'm curious to know how well it looks and plays on the Vita, because we covered this one when it released on Xbox, and I loved the game. I thought it was a fantastic game. Well, I'm curious to know how well it handles on the Vita.
I played this at PAX South, and I couldn't remember what it was called. And Chris told me, twice, that it was Oceanhorn, and I'm like, no, you're wrong. That's not what it's called. It was called something else.
I think she thought it was called, she thought it was the Monster Boy game. Not the one I reviewed, but the other one.
Yeah, that new one is so good.
Yeah, they were the displays were next to each other, and the signage was really weird. It looked like there was a Monster Boy placard above the ocean
horn display. There was, and the card, yeah. The little, business cards for the Monster Boy game were next to the Vita that was playing Ocean Horn.
So,
that's why. And so I had wanted to play it, and then I got to play it, and I love it on the Vita. But I love playing games on the Vita. I don't know what it would be like to play it on a regular console, but they don't use the touch screen much. So, I mean, you can use the touch screen if you want to access the menu or the fish log, which I haven't gotten to go fishing yet, so I'm hoping that I unlock that soon. But it's, I don't know, it's really fun, and I'm hoping that I can find the boots so I can get the ocean emblem.
Nice. So for $12.99 on Vita, if people are interested on it on PS4 or on Xbox One, it's $14.99. So for $12.99 on Vita, what are your thoughts on it? What is your verdict?
I think it'd be awesome on any system. Oh no, I just got killed.
See, you are playing it.
I was answering your question, so a bird killed me. It's not my fault. I pulled it up so I could look at the menu while I was describing it.
Is it all right if I interject a little something here?
Clearly, that's why you're here.
Yeah.
No.
So, you're talking about how good the music is. Actually, I'm looking at the page for it. It looks like the composer... well, Kali Litalo is the main composer, but it has tracks in it by Kenji Ito, who is a popular composer for the Saga series, and Nobuo Uematsu actually contributed some tracks.
Yep.
So that's some pedigree right there.
They ain't the fucking around really with that good soundtrack.
And the voice acting is really good, too. Like, the voice acting and the music, more than the actual animation of the game, really draw me into it. So if you like puzzles and fighting monsters, then you should play this game.
Sounds good. Yeah, like I said, I really enjoyed it on Xbox One. I might have to pick it up a second time on the Vita just to have the whole portable aspect to it. But solid stuff, so.
Yeah, I super dig it, and I'm going to finish playing it, because now I'm invested.
And then you can go and play some Zelda games afterwards.
I don't know. Well, we're playing Triforce Heroes as a group some weekends, and that's pretty fun. But I tried to play the first Zelda many years ago, and it doesn't tell you how to do anything, and so I just stopped playing, and I had the cartridge and the box, and I just gave it to a friend as a present. I was like, here, you can have this.
Oh yeah, the first one's a tough one to get into.
And so I'll tell you, I just never played a Zelda since then.
I'll tell you both something that'll make it a little easier for you. That first little cave and that screen, you're supposed to go in there and get a sword.
Chris,
you'll have a less hard time.
I'm gonna lock the door, and then you can stay out there with the cat.
Oh yeah, and my copy of Zelda.
Chris, you might enjoy a game we talked about earlier in the show called Shotgun Legend on Steam, which is basically the original Zelda game style, but the dude has a shotgun.
That's amazing.
And he's trying to, instead of pieces of Triforce, he's getting pieces of a truck rim to get home.
that sounds
beautiful. Very,
sounds very much like something you would find in the South.
Yeah, so you should look into that one. But Catherine, Chris, thank you so much for coming on and taking care of those games. Do you have any final words to wrap things up?
No.
Oh, man. Thanks again to Catherine and Chris for that. And we shall move on. Final game to talk about tonight is called Embers of Miriam, developed and published by Creative Bytes. It released May 24th on Xbox One, PS4, and Steam for $19.99. To save their world from an alien threat, two proud races must set aside their differences and come together Literally, Embers of Miriam is an adventure platformer featuring a mythical creature with the ability to split into light and dark embers, each independently controlled by the analog sticks. The way this game starts off is that you are introduced to a light creature who has certain abilities and a dark creature who has certain abilities. There's some kind of big gathering that one of each ends up running late to. So after everyone has dispersed, these two show up and they start fighting because they're warring tribes. And this alien machine thing, whatever, fuses them together into a hybrid being that has the abilities of both. Also,
so this game has a moral.
Yes, work with your enemies for the greater good. Set aside your differences for a better America.
And mutant powers.
Yes, very much. The game basically plays out like a 2D platform adventure puzzle platformer. The big thing here is that you will be required to separate your being into the light and the dark orbs and travel through different puzzle areas using the twin stick mechanic, which for older people like me who brain can't process moving different directions with your thumbs at the same time can get tough. I know some people have had an easy time with the game, and for a lot of the game I had no problem with, but every now and then there would just be this one area where, you know, you have to move the two orbs in seemingly the similar direction and then immediately change up to opposite direction or cross paths to the other side, and my brain just can't do it because I'm old and dying.
Yeah, I try to play games like that sometimes, but they're easier said than done. Cookies and Cream. There was that one like spheroid game on Xbox a ways back.
I know the game Brothers was like that, where each character was on a separate stick. Oh,
fuck, dude. Brothers was a rough one to actually get used to because of that.
But was it a lot of reaction, like timed reaction stuff, or could you take your sweet time controlling the two of them?
For the most of the time, you could take your sweet time, but there were some puzzles that required quick reaction.
Yeah, Embers of Miriam, when it comes down to it, like, you gotta get your shit together and figure it out quick. The game is fairly generous with checkpoints, so it's not an unfairly difficult game, and as long as you can get used to the twin stick mechanic, it's fairly easy to just really enjoy. It's a beautiful game, great visual style to it, plenty to do in the game. It's a decently long adventure, plus there's plenty of side puzzles that you can attempt, at least. Kind of like Constellations, where you have to connect the stars, but each one, you know, there's the two sets of colors that you have to use each of the sticks for, which can throw you off. There's hidden areas where you can find either the constellations or some of the other animals that you have to rescue through the game. If you've missed something, there is a chapter select, so you could go back and, like, I didn't realize how much shit I have missed in the game, but I went to the chapter select. I'm like, wow, I only found 3 of the 6 constellation things, and that chapter, where did I miss them? So there's some nice hidden stuff in there. Game length it's not going to be something that you sink 20 hours into, but I'd say like 6 or so hours for the campaign, and then you can go back and try to find what you missed. Plays well, looks well, really enjoyable game, and as long as you can wrap your head around the twin stick mechanic for $20, it definitely a recommend to try it. It's a really enjoyable game.
Neat.
Yeah. It's a unique style of challenge that doesn't happen very often these days either, so.
Yeah, it's good.
I always have a smile for that.
I love seeing unique stuff like this come out. I will say there was a fairly frustrating part early in the game where you're at a waterfall and these tree trunks would come down and each one would have, you know, a certain puzzle that you had to go through where you would split your creature into the two orbs and the orbs only have a limited amount of time that they're able to be active, that you can move them around. And when they both run up, you know, your beast rejoins. You can pass through different orbs that recharge you, or if you're in a, like a, it's like a web or a net or something that keeps you charged while you're in it. And the goal of the waterfall section was these trunks would come down with the puzzles and you'd have to steer the creature through. And it just seemed to never end, that section. Like each, the waterfall section, it had to have like five or six of the tree trunks come down, and then you would do a platforming section and you would come to another area and there was like another five or six tree trunks. And you're like, wow. Oh my God, this could end now. And then there was like a third one that had another five or six of them. And even the achievement was like too many trees or like too much waterfall or something like that. So I think they realized that they went a bit overboard on that. But it's definitely
clearly a mess against logging. See?
Yeah. It definitely wasn't enough to change my opinion on the game being really good. I wish it was a smidge cheaper, but again, for $20 for the amount of content in there and the amount of secrets, and just it's a good looking enjoyable game. So try it. Recommend to try it.
Color coded chaos.
Embers of Miriam, color coded chaos.
The beast rejoins.
In-game in the chat says, charming and challenging. That's definitely a good way to put it. Oh, man. But yeah, good stuff. That's all I got for this episode.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize that was the last one. I thought there was one more.
Did you not hear the point where I said final game to talk about tonight?
No, I didn't, actually. I must have been hearing all of that going from your mic, you know? Mm-hmm.
Coming from your mind.
I mean, there's a handful of other games that we could cover, but let's see. That one says CJ. That one says CJ. That one says CJ. That one says CJ that you haven't done.
Hey, one of those games I just got today, so, and I was at work all day.
CJ.
And I'm sorry, I have to work.
I think Purnell does a lot more than you.
I'm working 9 to 9, sometimes maybe a little less.
So Purnell, let me guess, Purnell, you work today, right?
Yeah, I worked from 8:30 to 6:30, then right after that I went and did the podcast, finished the podcast at 10:30, drove right home, and then got on here. So I have had no downtime today. It's like 7:30.
And CJ, what did you do today? You made some sandwiches?
You make it seem like, you know, whatever. You're annoying me now. Because what he does have nothing to do with what I did. It doesn't matter. I got up, and then as soon as I came home, I had to do this. I haven't had any downtime either. I got up, went to work at 3, and then worked until 10. And I came home and did this.
Mm. Poor baby.
I haven't even done half my day yet because I stay up until like 4 in the morning because that's how my schedule works.
Oh, so secret revealed. His day hasn't even gotten, he's not even near the end of his day yet. He's still got multiple hours left.
No, I have 2 hours left because I normally go to bed about 3 or 4 a.m.
Poor baby.
Oh, well, I have to stay on that schedule. I can't just change my schedule.
You're not trying hard enough, man. You gotta get in there and tell them. Oh, I'm not feeling good. Oh, sick.
I did that last Tuesday, but I can't do that again.
Well, y'all know that. Shoot. Those allergies, they just flare right up.
Allergies don't stop anybody from working unless they're really severe. I mean,
and honestly, they don't stop people from working, but I'm sure people have used it as an excuse anyway.
I mean, I'm sure there are people out there that use it as an excuse, sure. Because it's real easy to make allergies sound like you're sick by just sneezing all the time. It's like, yeah, I have a cold. And you can't go to my job if you even have a cold because it's contagious and you could get it on the food.
Exactly, see? Just got to play it up. Oh, man, I got that cold thing. Patootie. My sneezes.
So, oh, yeah, mercy. I guess that's all for tonight, huh?
Which is all right with me, because I got napping to do. And I got to hurry up before I end up trying to buy this damn Chroma Squad. I want to hold off on that a little bit longer. I am going to buy it eventually, but I want to buy it right now.
I want to play that one. I picked it up, and I haven't had time for it.
It looks cool, and the premise is cool, and the music is awesome. And it's done by, like, genuine fans of Sentai shows.
Yeah, I like how they had to put in inspired by Saban's Power Rangers. Because they had, like, a cease and desist on the game.
Oh, did they? Is that what happened?
They had to put that in there.
It's a darn shame, but at least they let him get away by just doing that component. Yeah. Being Dixon just canceling the game entirely.
True. Completely original, just similar to it, but I guess it was enough that Saban's like, hey, give us money.
Has this episode even ended yet?
No, it didn't. So I don't know what I'm playing for music. I never know what I'm playing for music anymore. So there's going to be music. But Pernell, how about you give us some final words to end the show?
Sour Patch Kids are very good. I recommend you eat them at any time available to you. I recommend you check out Rhythm and Pixels, the video game music podcast, if you got time. And if you're going to happen to be at the Too Many Games video game convention in Oaks, Pennsylvania at the end of June 25th at 10:30 a.m. to be precise, we have a panel there. So it's worth coming to check it out and have a ball. You can see me live ramble just as much as I ramble on this show, but now with the potential for not being edited out, my mistakes will stay in.
No.
Joe doesn't think I edit.
Watch that. The fuck you been coming at ya? for him.
Love. What is love? What is free love? What is free boy? What is boy? What is girl? What is free girl? What is love is free.
This, like that, like this, like that, like this, this, like that.